9. Hazardous Materials 1. The intent of the regulations 2. Hazardous Materials Transportation, who does what 3. Communication Rules 4. Loading and Unloading 5. Bulk Packaging Marking, Loading and Unloading 6. Hazardous Materials, Driving and Parking Rules 7. Hazardous Materials, Emergencies 8. Hazardous Materials Glossary. This section covers the intent of the regulations bulk tank loading, unloading, and marking, driver responsibilities, driving and parking rules, communications rules, emergencies, loading and unloading. Hazardous materials are products that pose a risk to health, safety, and property during transportation. The term often is shortened to HAZMAT, which you may see on road signs, or to HM in government regulations. Hazardous materials include explosives, various types of gas, solids, flammable and combustible liquid, and other materials. Because of the risks involved and the potential consequences these risks impose, all levels of government regulate the handling of hazardous materials. The Hazardous Materials Regulations HMR is found in Parts 171-180 of Title 49 of the Code of Federal Regulations. The common reference for these regulations is 49 CFR 171-180. The hazardous materials table in these regulations contains a list of these items. However, this list is not all-inclusive. Whether or not a material is considered hazardous is based on its characteristics and the shipper's decision on whether or not the material meets a definition of a hazardous material in the regulations. The regulations require vehicles transporting certain types or quantities of hazardous materials to display diamond-shaped, square-on-point, warning signs called placards. This section is designed to assist you in understanding your role and responsibilities in hauling hazardous materials. Due to the constantly changing nature of government regulations, it is impossible to guarantee absolute accuracy of the materials in this section. An up-to-date copy of the complete regulations is essential for you to have. Included in these regulations is a complete glossary of terms. You must have a commercial driver license CDL with a hazardous materials endorsement before you drive any size vehicle that is used in the transportation of any material that requires hazardous material placarding or any quantity of a material listed as a select agent or toxin in 42 CFR 93. You must pass a written test about the regulations and requirements to get this endorsement. Everything you need to know to pass the written test is in this section. However, this is only a beginning. Most drivers need to know much more on the job. You can learn more by reading and understanding the federal and state rules applicable to hazardous materials, as well as attending hazardous materials training courses. Your employer, colleges and universities, and various associations usually offer these courses. You can get copies of the Federal Regulations 49 CFR through your local government printing office, bookstore, and various industry publishers. Union or company offices often have copies of the rules for driver use. Find out where you can get your own copy to use on the job. The regulations require training and testing for all drivers involved in transporting hazardous materials. Your employer or a designated representative is required to provide this training and testing. Hazardous materials employers are required to keep a record of that training on each employee as long as that employee is working with hazardous materials, and for 90 days thereafter. The regulations require that hazardous materials employees be trained and tested at least once every 3 years. By March 24, 2006, all drivers must be trained in the security risks of hazardous materials transportation. This training must include how to recognize and respond to possible security threats. The regulations also require that drivers have special training before driving a vehicle transporting certain flammable gas materials or highway route controlled quantities of radioactive materials. In addition, Drivers transporting cargo tanks and portable tanks must receive specialized training. Each driver's employer or his or her designated representative must provide such training. Some locations require permits to transport certain explosives or bulk hazardous wastes. States and counties also may require drivers to follow special hazardous materials routes. The federal government may require permits or exemptions for special hazardous materials cargo such as rocket fuel. Find out about permits, exemptions, and special routes for the places you drive. 9.1. The intent of the regulations 9.1.1 contain the material transporting hazardous materials can be risky. The regulations are intended to protect you, those around you, and the environment. They tell shippers how to package the material safely and drivers how to load, transport, and unload the material. These are called containment rules. 9.1.2 Communicate the risk. To communicate the risk, shippers must warn drivers and others about the material's hazards. The regulations require shippers to put hazard warning labels on packages, provide proper shipping papers, emergency response information, and placards. These steps communicate the hazard to the shipper, the carrier, and the driver. 9.1.3 Assure safe drivers and equipment. In order to get a hazardous materials endorsement on a CDL, you must pass a written test about transporting hazardous materials. To pass the test, you must know how to identify what are hazardous materials, safely load shipments, properly placard your vehicle in accordance with the rules, safely transport shipments. Learn the rules and follow them. Following the rules reduces the risk of injury from hazardous materials. Taking shortcuts by breaking rules is unsafe. Rule breakers can be fined and put in jail. Inspect your vehicle before and during each trip. Law enforcement officers may stop and inspect your vehicle. When stopped, they may check your shipping papers, vehicle placards, and the hazardous materials endorsement on your driver license, and your knowledge of hazardous materials. 9.2 Hazardous materials transportation. Who does what? 9.2.1 The shipper sends products from one place to another by truck, rail, vessel, or airplane. Uses the hazardous materials regulations to determine the products. O proper shipping name. O hazard class. O identification number. O packing group. O correct packaging. O correct label and markings. O correct placards. Must package, mark, and label the materials. Prepare shipping papers. Provide emergency response information. And supply placards. Certify on the shipping paper that the shipment has been prepared according to the rules unless you are pulling cargo tanks supplied by you or your employer. 9.2.2 The carrier takes the shipment from the shipper to its destination. Prior to transportation, checks that the shipper correctly described, marked, labeled, and otherwise prepared the shipment for transportation. Refuses improper shipments. Reports accidents and incidents involving hazardous materials to the proper government agency. 9.2.3 The driver makes sure the shipper has identified, marked, and labeled the hazardous materials properly. Refuses leaking packages and shipments. Placards his vehicle when loading, if required. Safely transports the shipment without delay. Follows all special rules about transporting hazardous materials. Keeps hazardous materials shipping papers and emergency response information in the proper place. 9.3 Communication Rules 9.3.1 Definitions Hazardous Materials Table Figure 9-1 Some words and phrases have special meanings when talking about hazardous materials. Some of these may differ from meanings you are used to. The words and phrases in this section may be on your test. The meanings of other important words are in the glossary at the end of Section 9. A materials hazard class reflects the risks associated with it. There are 9 different hazard classes. The types of materials included in these nine classes are in Figure 9.1. A shipping paper describes the hazardous materials being transported. Shipping orders, bills of lading, and manifest are all shipping papers. Figure 9.6 shows an example shipping paper. After an accident or hazardous materials spill or leak, you may be injured and unable to communicate the hazards of the materials you are transporting. Firefighters and police can prevent or reduce the amount of damage or injury at the scene if they know what hazardous materials are being carried. Your life, and the lives of others, may depend on quickly locating the hazardous materials shipping papers. For that reason, the rules require shippers to describe hazardous materials correctly and include an emergency response telephone number on shipping papers. Carriers and drivers to put tabs on hazardous materials shipping papers, or keep them on top of other shipping papers and keep the required emergency response information with the shipping papers. Drivers to keep hazardous materials shipping papers, or in a pouch on the driver's door, or in clear view within immediate reach while the seat belt is fastened while driving, or on the driver's seat when out of the vehicle. Examples of HAZMAT labels Figure 9-2, examples of HAZMAT labels 9.3.2 package labels. Shippers put diamond-shaped hazard warning labels on most hazardous materials packages. These labels inform others of the hazard. If the diamond label won't fit on the package, shippers may put the label on a tag securely attached to the package. For example, compressed gas cylinders that will not hold a label will have tags or decals. Labels look like the examples in Figure 9.2. 9.3.3 lists of regulated products. Examples of HAZMAT placards. Figure 9-3, examples of HAZMAT placards. Placards. Placards are used to warn others of hazardous materials. Placards are signs put on the outside of a vehicle and on bulk packages, which identify the hazard class of the cargo. A placarded vehicle must have at least four identical placards. They are put on the front, rear, and both sides of the vehicle. See Figure 9.3. Placards must be readable from all four directions. They are at least 10¾ inches square, square on point, in a diamond shape. Cargo tanks and other bulk packaging display the identification number of their contents on placards or orange panels or white square on-point displays that are the same size as placards. Identification numbers are a four-digit code used by first responders to identify hazardous materials. An identification number may be used to identify more than one chemical. The letters NA or UN will precede the identification number. The United States Department of Transportation's Emergency Response Guidebook ERG identifies the chemicals all identification numbers are assigned to. There are three main lists used by shippers, carriers, and drivers when trying to identify hazardous materials. Before transporting a material, look for its name on three lists. Some materials are on all lists, others on only one. Always check the following lists. Section 172.101, the Hazardous Materials Table. Appendix A to Section 172.101, the list of hazardous substances and reportable quantities. Appendix B to Section 172.101, the list of marine pollutants. The Hazardous Materials Table. Figure 9.4 shows part of the hazardous materials table. Column 1 tells which shipping mode is, the entry effects and other information concerning the shipping description. The next five columns show each material's shipping name, hazard class or division, identification number, packaging group, and required labels. Six different symbols may appear in column 1 of the table. Plus shows the proper shipping name, hazard class, and packing group to use, even if the material doesn't meet the hazard class definition. A means the hazardous material described in column 2 is subject to the HMR only when offered or intended for transport by air unless it is a hazardous substance or hazardous waste. W means the hazardous material described in column 2 is subject to the HMR only when offered or intended for transportation by water unless it is a hazardous substance, hazardous waste, or marine pollutant. D means the proper shipping name is appropriate for describing materials for domestic transportation, but may not be proper for international transportation. I identifies a proper shipping name that is used to describe materials in international transportation. A different shipping name may be used when only domestic transportation is involved. G means this hazardous material described in column 2 is a generic shipping name. A generic shipping name must be accompanied by a technical name on the shipping paper. A technical name is a specific chemical that makes the product hazardous. Hazardous Materials Table Figure 9-4 List of Hazardous Substances. Figure 9-5 Column 2 lists the proper shipping names and descriptions of regulated materials. Entries are in alphabetical order so you can more quickly find the right entry. The table shows proper shipping names in regular type. The shipping paper must show proper shipping names. Names shown in italics are not proper shipping names. Column 3 shows a materials hazard class or division, or the entry forbidden. Never transport a forbidden material. You placard shipments based on the quantity and hazard class. You can decide which placards to use if you know these three things: materials hazard class, amount being shipped, amount of all hazardous materials of all classes on your vehicle. Column 4 lists the identification number for each proper shipping name. Identification numbers are preceded by the letters UN or NA. The letters NA are associated with proper shipping names that are only used within the United States and to and from Canada. The identification number must appear on the shipping paper as part of the shipping description and also appear on the package. It also must appear on cargo tanks and other bulk packaging. Police and firefighters use this number to quickly identify the hazardous materials. Column 5 shows the packing group in Roman numeral assigned to a material. Column 6 shows the hazard warning label S. Shippers must put on packages of hazardous materials. Some products require use of more than one label due to a dual hazard being present. No label is needed where the table shows the word none. Column 7 lists the additional special provisions that apply to this material. When there is an entry in this column, you must refer to the federal regulations for specific information. The numbers 1-6 inches this column mean the hazardous material is a poison inhalation hazard PIH. PIH materials have special requirements for shipping papers, marking, and placards. Column 8 is a three-part column showing the section numbers covering the packaging requirements for each hazardous material. Note, columns 9 and 10 do not apply to transportation by highway. Appendix A to 49 CFR 172.101, the list of hazardous substances and reportable quantities. The DOT and the EPA want to know about spills of hazardous substances. They are named in the list of hazardous substances and reportable quantities. See Figure 9.5. Column 3 of the list shows each product's reportable quantity RQ. When these materials are being transported in a reportable quantity or greater in one package, the shipper displays the letters RQ on the shipping paper and package. The letters RQ may appear before or after the basic description. You or your employer must report any spill of these materials, which occurs in a reportable quantity. If the words inhalation hazard appear on the shipping paper or package, the rules require display of the poison inhalation hazard or poison GAS placards, as appropriate. These placards must be used in addition to other placards, which may be required by the product's hazard class. Always display the hazard class placard and the poison inhalation hazard placard, even for small amounts. Appendix B to 49 CFR 172.101, Marine Pollutants. Appendix B is a listing of chemicals that are toxic to marine life. For highway transportation, this list is only used for chemicals in a container with a capacity of 119 gallons or more without a placard or label as specified by the HMR. Any bulk packages of a marine pollutant must display the marine pollutant marking white triangle with a fish and an X through the fish. This marking it is not a placard must also be displayed on the outside of the vehicle. In addition, a notation must be made on the shipping papers near the description of the material, marine pollutant 9.3.4. The shipping paper figure 9-6. The shipping paper shown in figure 9.6 describes a shipment. A shipping paper for hazardous materials must include page numbers if the shipping paper has more than one page. The first page must tell the total number of pages. For example, page 1 of 4. A proper shipping description for each hazardous material. A shipper's certification, signed by the shipper, saying they prepared the shipment according to the rules. 9.3.5 The item description. If a shipping paper describes both hazardous and non-hazardous products, the hazardous materials will be either described first, highlighted in a contrasting color, identified by an X placed before the shipping name in a column captioned HM. The letters RQ may be used instead of X if a reportable quantity is present in one package. The basic description of hazardous materials includes the proper shipping name, hazard class or division, the identification number, and the packing group, if any, in that order. The packing group is displayed in Roman numerals and may be preceded by PG. Shipping name, hazard class, an identification number must not be abbreviated unless specifically authorized in the hazardous materials regulations. The description must also show the total quantity and unit of measure. The letters RQ, if a reportable quantity. If the letters RQ appear, the name of the hazardous substance. For all materials with the letter G generic in column 1, the technical name of the hazardous material. Shipping papers also must list an emergency response telephone number. The emergency response telephone number is the responsibility of the shipper. It can be used by emergency responders to obtain information about any hazardous materials involved in a spill or fire. Some hazardous materials do not need a telephone number. You should check the regulations for a listing. Shippers also must provide emergency response information to the motor carrier for each hazardous material being shipped. The emergency response information must be able to be used away from the motor vehicle and must provide information on how to safely handle incidents involving the material. It must include information on the shipping name of the hazardous materials, risks to health, fire, explosion, and initial methods of handling spills, fires, and leaks of the materials. Such information can be on the shipping paper or some other document that includes the basic description and technical name of the hazardous material. Or, it may be in a guidance book such as the Emergency Response Guidebook ERG. Motor carriers may assist shippers by keeping an ERG on each vehicle carrying hazardous materials. The driver must provide the emergency response information to any federal, state, or local authority responding to a hazardous materials incident or investigating one. Total quantity must appear before or after the basic description. The packaging type and the unit of measurement may be abbreviated. For example, 10 CTNS. Paint, 3, UN 1263, PG 2nd, 500 pounds. The shipper of hazardous wastes must put the word waste before the proper shipping name of the material on the shipping paper hazardous waste manifest. For example, waste acetone, 3, UN 1090, PG 2nd. A non-hazardous material may not be described by using a hazard class or an identification number. 9.3.6 Shipper's certification. When the shipper packages hazardous materials, He/she certifies that the package has been prepared according to the rules. The signed shipper's certification appears on the original shipping paper. The only exceptions are when a shipper is a private carrier transporting their own product and when the package is provided by the carrier, for example, a cargo tank. Unless a package is clearly unsafe or does not comply with the HMR, you may accept the shipper's certification concerning proper packaging. Some carriers have additional rules about transporting hazardous materials. Follow your employer's rules when accepting shipments. 9.3.7 Package markings and labels. Shippers print required markings directly on the package, unattached label, or tag. An important package marking is the name of the hazardous materials. It is the same name as the one on the shipping paper. The requirements for marking vary by package size and material being transported. When required, the shipper will put the following on the package: the name and address of shipper or consignee, the hazardous materials shipping name and identification number, the labels required. It is a good idea to compare the shipping paper to the markings and labels. Always make sure that the shipper shows the correct basic description on the shipping paper and verifies that the proper labels are shown on the packages. If you are not familiar with the material, ask the shipper to contact your office. If rules require it, the shipper will put RQ, marine pollutant, biohazard, hot, or inhalation hazard on the package. Packages with liquid containers inside will also have package orientation markings with the arrows pointing in the correct upright direction. The labels used always reflect the hazard class of the product. If a package needs more than one label, the labels will be close together, near the proper shipping name. 9.3.8 Recognizing hazardous materials. Learn to recognize shipments of hazardous materials. To find out if the shipment includes hazardous materials, look at the shipping paper. Does it have an entry with the proper shipping name, hazard class, and identification number? A highlighted entry, or one with an X or RQ in the hazardous materials column? Other clues suggesting hazardous materials. What business is the shipper in? Paint dealer? Chemical supply? Scientific supply house? Pest control or agricultural supplier? Explosives, munitions, or fireworks dealer? Are there tanks with diamond labels or placards on the premises? What type of package is being shipped? Cylinders and drums are often used for hazardous materials shipments. Is a hazard class label, proper shipping name, or identification number on the package? Are there any handling precautions? 9.3.9 Hazardous Waste Manifest. When transporting hazardous wastes, you must sign by hand and carry a uniform hazardous waste manifest. The name and EPA registration number of the shippers, carriers, and destination must appear on the manifest. Shippers must prepare, date, and sign by hand the manifest. Treat the manifest as a shipping paper when transporting the waste. Only give the waste shipment to another registered carrier or disposal treatment facility. Each carrier transporting the shipment must sign by hand the manifest. After you deliver the shipment, keep your copy of the manifest. Each copy must have all needed signatures and dates, including those of the person to whom you deliver the waste. September 3, 10 placarding. Attach the appropriate placards to the vehicle before you drive it. You are only allowed to move an improperly placarded vehicle during an emergency, in order to protect life or property. Placards must appear on both sides and both ends of the vehicle. Each placard must be easily seen from the direction it faces. Placed so the words or numbers are level and read from left to right. At least 3 inches away from any other markings. Kept clear of attachments or devices such as ladders, doors, and tarpaulins. Kept clean and undamaged so that the color, format, and message are easily seen. Be affixed to a background of contrasting color. The use of "Drive Safely" and other slogans is prohibited. The front placard may be on the front of the tractor or the front of the trailer. To decide which placards to use, you need to know the hazard class of the materials, the amount of hazardous materials shipped, the total weight of all classes of hazardous materials in your vehicle. September 3, 11 Placard Tables. Placard Table 1 Figure 9-7. Placard Table 2 Figure 9-8. There are two placard tables, Table 1 and Table 2. Table 1 materials must be placarded whenever any amount is transported. See Figure 9.7. Except for bulk packagings, the hazard classes in Table 2 need placards only if the total amount transported is 1,001 pounds or more, including the package. Add the amounts from all shipping papers for all the Table 2 products you have on board. See Figure 9.8. You may use dangerous placards instead of separate placards for each Table 2 hazard class when you have 1,001 pounds or more of two or more Table 2 hazard classes, requiring different placards, and you have not loaded 2,205 pounds or more of any Table 2 hazard class material at any one place. You must use the specific placard for this material. The dangerous placard is an option, not a requirement. You can always placard for the materials. If the words inhalation hazard are on the shipping paper or package, you must display poison gas or poison inhalation placards in addition to any other placards needed by the product's hazard class. The 1,000-pound exception does not apply to these materials. Materials with a secondary hazard of dangerous when wet must display the dangerous when wet placard in addition to any other placards needed by the product's hazard class. The 1,000-pound exception to placarding does not apply to these materials. Placards used to identify the primary or subsidiary hazard class of a material must have the hazard class or division number displayed in the lower corner of the placard. Permanently affixed subsidiary hazard placards without the hazard class number may be used as long as they stay within color specifications. Non-permanently affixed subsidiary hazard placards without the hazard class number may be used until October 1, 2005. Placards may be displayed for hazardous materials even if not required, so long as the placard identifies the hazard of the material being transported. A bulk packaging is a single container with a capacity of 119 gallons or more. A bulk package, and a vehicle transporting a bulk package, must be placarded, even if it only has the residue of a hazardous material. Certain bulk packages only have to be placarded on the two opposite sides or may display labels. All other bulk packages must be placarded on all four sides. Subsections 9.1, 9.2, and 9.3 test your knowledge. 1. Shipper's package in order to fill in the blank the material. 2. Driver placard their vehicle to fill in the blank the risk. 3. What three things do you need to know to decide which placards, if any, you need? 4. A hazardous materials identification number must appear on the fill in the blank and on the fill in the blank. The identification number must also appear on cargo tanks and other bulk packaging. 5. Where must you keep shipping papers describing hazardous materials? These questions may be on your test. If you can't answer them all, reread subsections 9.1, 9.2 and 9.3. 9.4. Loading and unloading. Do all you can to protect containers of hazardous materials. Don't use any tools which might damage containers or other packaging during loading. Don't use hooks. 9.4.1 General loading requirements. Before loading or unloading, set the parking brake. Make sure the vehicle will not move. Many products become more hazardous when exposed to heat. Load hazardous materials away from heat sources. Watch for signs of leaking or damaged containers. Leaks spell trouble. Do not transport leaking packages. Depending on the material, you, your truck, and others could be in danger. It is illegal to move a vehicle with leaking hazardous materials. Containers of Class 1 explosives, Class 3 flammable liquids, Class 4 flammable solids, Class 5 oxidizers, Class 8 corrosives, Class 2 gases, Division 6.1 poisons, and Class 7 radioactive must be braced to prevent movement of the packages during transportation. No smoking. When loading or unloading hazardous materials, keep fire away. Don't let people smoke nearby. Never smoke around. Class 1 explosives, Class 2.1 flammable gas, Class 3 flammable liquids, Class 4 flammable solids, Class 5 oxidizers secure against movement. Brace containers so they will not fall, slide, or bounce around during transportation. Be very careful when loading containers that have valves or other fittings. All hazardous materials packages must be secured during transportation. After loading, do not open any package during your trip. Never transfer hazardous materials from one package to another while in transit. You may empty a cargo tank, but do not empty any other package while it is on the vehicle. Cargo heater rules. There are special cargo heater rules for loading. Class 1 explosives, Class 2.1 flammable gas, Class 3 flammable liquids. The rules usually forbid use of cargo heaters, including automatic cargo heater air conditioner units. Unless you have read all the related rules, don't load the above products in a cargo space that has a heater. Use closed cargo space. You cannot have overhang or tailgate loads of Class 1 explosives, Class 4 flammable solids, Class 5 oxidizers. You must load these hazardous materials into a closed cargo space unless all packages are fire and water resistant. Covered with a fire and water resistant tarp. Precautions for specific hazards, Class 1 explosives materials. Turn your engine off before loading or unloading any explosives. Then check the cargo space. You must disable cargo heaters. Disconnect heater power sources and drain heater fuel tanks. Make sure there are no sharp points that might damage cargo. Look for bolts, screws, nails, broken side panels, and broken floorboards. Use a floor lining with Division 1.1, 1.2, or 1.3 Class A or B explosives. The floors must be tight and the liner must be either non-metallic material or non-ferrous metal. Use extra care to protect explosives. Never use hooks or other metal tools. Never drop, throw, or roll packages. Protect explosive packages from other cargo that might cause damage. Do not transfer a Division 1.1, 1.2, or 1.3 Class A or B explosive from one vehicle to another on a public roadway except in an emergency. If safety requires an emergency transfer, set out red warning reflectors, flags, or electric lanterns. You must warn others on the road. Never transport damaged packages of explosives. Do not take a package that shows any dampness or oily stain. Do not transport Division 1.1 or 1.2 Class A explosives in triples or in vehicle combinations if there is a marked or placarded cargo tank in the combination. The other vehicle in the combination contains O Division 1.1A initiating explosives. O packages of Class 7 radioactive materials labeled yellow 3O Division 2.3 poisonous gas or Division 6.1 poisonous materials. O hazardous materials in a portable tank, on a DOT Spec 106A or 110A tank. Class 4 flammable solids and Class 5 oxidizers materials. Class 4 materials are solids that react including fire and explosion to water, heat, and air or even react spontaneously. Class 4 and 5 materials must be completely enclosed in a vehicle or covered securely. Class 4 and 5 materials, which become unstable and dangerous when wet, must be kept dry while in transit and during loading and unloading. Materials that are subject to spontaneous combustion or heating must be in vehicles with sufficient ventilation. Class 8 corrosive materials. If loading by hand, load breakable containers of corrosive liquid one by one. Keep them right side up. Do not drop or roll the containers. Load them onto an even floor surface. Stack carboys only if the lower tiers can bear the weight of the upper tiers safely. Do not load nitric acid above any other product. Load charged storage batteries so their liquid won't spill. Keep them right side up. Make sure other cargo won't fall against or short-circuit them. Never load corrosive liquids next to or above Division 1.4 Explosive C. Division 4.1 Flammable Solids. Division 4.3 Dangerous When Wet. Class 5 Oxidizers. Division 2.3 Zone B Poisonous Gases. Never load corrosive liquids with Division 1.1 or 1.2 Explosives A. Division 1.2 or 1.3 Explosives B. Division 1.5 Blasting Agents. Division 2.3 Zone A Poisonous Gases. Division 4.2 Spontaneously Combustible Materials. Division 6.1 PGI Zone A Poison Liquids. Class 2 Compressed Gases including Cryogenic Liquids. If your vehicle doesn't have racks to hold cylinders, the cargo space floor must be flat. The cylinders must be held upright. In racks attached to the vehicle or in boxes that will keep them from turning over. Do not load table figure 9-9 cylinders may be loaded in a horizontal position lying down if it is designed so the relief valve is in the vapor space. Division 2.3 Poisonous Gas or Division 6.1 Poisonous Materials. Never transport these materials in containers with interconnections. Never load a package labeled poison or poison inhalation hazard in the driver's cab or sleeper or with food material for human or animal consumption. There are special rules for loading and unloading Class 2 materials in cargo tanks. You must have special training to do this. Class 7 Radioactive Materials. Some packages of Class 7 radioactive materials bear a number called the Transport Index. The shipper labels these packages Radioactive 2 or Radioactive 3, and prints the package's Transport Index on the label. Radiation surrounds each package, passing through all nearby packages. To deal with this problem, the number of packages you can load together is controlled. Their closeness to people, animals, and unexposed film is also controlled. The transport index tells the degree of control needed during transportation. The total transport index of all packages in a single vehicle must not exceed 50. Table 2 to this section shows rules for each transport index. It shows how close you can load Class 7 radioactive materials to people, animals, or film. For example, you can't leave a package with a transport index of 1.1 within 2 feet of people or cargo space walls. Mixed loads. The rules require some products to be loaded separately. You cannot load them together in the same cargo space. Figure 9.9 lists some examples. The regulations, the segregation and separation chart name other materials you must keep apart. Subsection 9.4 Test Your Knowledge 1. Around which hazard classes must you never smoke? 2. Which 3 hazard classes should not be loaded into a trailer that has a heater air conditioner unit? 3. Should the floor liner required for Division 1.1 or 1.2 materials explosives A, B stainless steel? 4. At the shipper's dock you're given a paper for 100 cartons of battery acid. You already have 100 pounds of dry silver cyanide on board. What precautions do you have to take? 5. Name a hazard class that uses transport indexes to determine the amount that can be loaded in a single vehicle. These questions may be on your test. If you can't answer them all, reread subsection 9.4. 9.5. Bulk packaging marking, loading and unloading. The glossary at the end of this section gives the meaning of the word bulk. Cargo tanks are bulk packaging permanently attached to a vehicle. Cargo tanks remain on the vehicle when you load and unload them. Portable tanks are bulk packaging, which are not permanently attached to a vehicle. The product is loaded or unloaded while the portable tanks are off the vehicle. Portable tanks are then put on a vehicle for transportation. There are many types of cargo tanks in use. The most common cargo tanks are MC306 for liquids and MC331 for gases. 9.5.1 Markings. You must display the identification number of the hazardous materials in portable tanks and cargo tanks and other bulk packaging such as dump trucks. Identification numbers are in column 4 of the hazardous materials table. The rules require black 100mm 3.9-inch numbers on orange panels, placards, or a white, diamond-shaped background if no placards are required. Specification cargo tanks must show retestate markings. Portable tanks must also show the lessee or owner's name. They must also display the shipping name of the contents on two opposing sides. The letters of the shipping name must be at least 2 inches tall on portable tanks with capacities of more than 1,000 gallons and 1 inch tall on portable tanks with capacities of less than 1,000 gallons. The identification number must appear on each side and each end of a portable tank or other bulk packaging that hold 1,000 gallons or more and on two opposing sides, if the portable tank holds less than 1,000 gallons. The identification numbers must still be visible when the portable tank is on the motor vehicle. If they are not visible, you must display the identification number on both sides and ends of the motor vehicle. Intermediate bulk containers (IBCs) are bulk packages, but are not required to have the owner's name or shipping name. 9.5.2 Tank loading. The person in charge of loading and unloading a cargo tank must be sure a qualified person is always watching. This person watching the loading or unloading must be alert. Have a clear view of the cargo tank. Be within 25 feet of the tank. Know of the hazards of the materials involved. Know the procedures to follow in an emergency. Be authorized to move the cargo tank and able to do so. There are special attendance rules for cargo tanks transporting propane and anhydrous ammonia. Close all manholes and valves before moving a tank of hazardous materials, no matter how small the amount in the tank or how short the distance. Manholes and valves must be closed to prevent leaks. It is illegal to move a cargo tank with open valves or covers unless it is empty according to 49 CFR 173.29. 9.5.3 Flammable liquids. Turn off your engine before loading or unloading any flammable liquids. Only run the engine if needed to operate a pump. Ground a cargo tank correctly before filling it through an open filling hole. Ground the tank before opening the filling hole, and maintain the ground until after closing the filling hole. 9.5.4 Compressed gas. Keep liquid discharge valves on a compressed gas tank closed except when loading and unloading. Unless your engine runs a pump for product transfer, turn it off when loading or unloading. If you use the engine, turn it off after product transfer, before you unhook the hose. Unhook all loading-unloading connections before coupling, uncoupling, or moving a cargo tank. Always track trailers and semi-trailers to prevent motion when uncoupled from the power unit. Subsection 9.5 Test your knowledge. 1. What are cargo tanks? 2. How is a portable tank different from a cargo tank? 3. Your engine runs a pump used during delivery of compressed gas. Should you turn off the engine before or after unhooking hoses after delivery? These questions may be on your test. If you can't answer them all, reread subsection 9.5. 9.6. Hazardous materials, driving and parking rules. 9.6.1 Parking with Division 1.1, 1.2, or 1.3 Class A or B, explosives. Never park with Division 1.1. 1.2, or 1.3 Class A or B, explosives within 5 feet of the traveled part of the road. Except for short periods of time needed for vehicle operation necessities, for example, fueling, do not park within 300 feet of a bridge, tunnel, or building. A place where people gather. An open fire. If you must park to do your job, do so only briefly. Don't park on private property unless the owner is aware of the danger. Someone must always watch the parked vehicle. You may let someone else watch it for you only if your vehicle is on the shipper's property, on the carrier's property, on the consignee's property. You are allowed to leave your vehicle unattended in a safe haven. A safe haven is an approved place for parking unattended vehicles loaded with explosives. Designation of authorized safe havens is usually made by local authorities. 9.6.2 Parking a placarded vehicle not transporting Division 1.1, 1.2, or 1.3 Class A or B explosives. You may park a placarded vehicle not laden with explosives within 5 feet of the traveled part of the road only if your work requires it. Do so only briefly. Someone must always watch the vehicle when parked on a public roadway or shoulder. Do not uncouple a trailer and leave it with hazardous materials on a public street. Do not park within 300 feet of an open fire. 9.6.3 Attending parked vehicles. The person attending a placarded vehicle must be in the vehicle, awake, and not in the sleeper berth, or within 100 feet of the vehicle and have it within clear view. Be aware of the hazards of the materials being transported. Know what to do in emergencies. Be able to move the vehicle, if needed. 9.6.4 No flares. You might break down and have to use stopped vehicle signals. Use reflective triangles or red electric lights. Never use burning signals, such as flares or fuses, around a tank used for Class 3 flammable liquids or Division 2.1 flammable gas, whether loaded or empty. Vehicle loaded with Division 1.1, 1.2, or 1.3 Class A or B explosives. 9.6.5 Route restrictions. Some states and counties require permits to transport hazardous materials or wastes. They may limit the routes you can use. Local rules about routes and permits change often. It is your job as driver to find out if you need permits or must use special routes. Make sure you have all needed papers before starting. If you work for a carrier, ask your dispatcher about route restrictions or permits. If you are an independent trucker and are planning a new route, check with state agencies where you plan to travel. Some localities prohibit transportation of hazardous materials through tunnels, over bridges, or other roadways. Check before you start. Whenever placarded, avoid heavily populated areas, crowds, tunnels, narrow streets, and alleys. Take other routes, even if inconvenient, unless there is no other way. Never drive a placarded vehicle near open fires unless you can safely pass without stopping. If transporting Division 1.1, 1.2, or 1.3 Class A or B explosives, you must have a written route plan and follow that plan. Carriers prepare the route plan in advance and give the driver a copy. You may plan the routes yourself if you pick up the explosives at a location other than your employer's terminal. Write out the plan in advance. Keep a copy of it with you while transporting the explosives. Deliver shipments of explosives only to authorized persons or leave them in locked rooms designed for explosive storage. A carrier must choose the safest route to transport placarded radioactive materials. After choosing the route, the carrier must tell the driver about the radioactive materials and show the route plan. 9.6.6 No smoking. Do not smoke within 25 feet of a placarded cargo tank used for Class 3 flammable liquids or Division 2.1 gases. Also, do not smoke or carry a lighted cigarette, cigar, or pipe within 25 feet of any vehicle which contains Class 1 explosives, Class 3 flammable liquids, Class 4 flammable solids, Class 5 oxidizers. 9.6.7 Refuel with engine off. Turn off your engine before fueling a motor vehicle containing hazardous materials. Someone must always be at the nozzle, controlling fuel flow. 9.6.8.10b See fire extinguisher. The power unit of placarded vehicles must have a fire extinguisher with a UL rating of 10B, C or more. 9.6.9 Check tires. Make sure your tires are properly inflated. Check placarded vehicles with dual tires at the start of each trip and when you park. You must check the tires each time you stop. The only acceptable way to check tire pressure is to use a tire pressure gauge. Do not drive with a tire that is leaking or flat except to the nearest safe place to fix it. Remove any overheated tire. Place it a safe distance from your vehicle. Don't drive until you correct the cause of the overheating. Remember to follow the rules about parking and attending placarded vehicles. They apply even when checking, repairing, or replacing tires. September 6, 10 Where to keep shipping papers and emergency response information. Do not accept a hazardous materials shipment without a properly prepared shipping paper. A shipping paper for hazardous materials must always be easily recognized. Other people must be able to find it quickly after an accident. Clearly distinguish hazardous materials shipping papers from others by tabbing them or keeping them on top of the stack of papers. When you are behind the wheel, keep shipping papers within your reach with your seat belt on, or in a pouch on the driver's door. They must be easily seen by someone entering the cab. When not behind the wheel, leave shipping papers in the driver's door pouch or on the driver's seat. Emergency response information must be kept in the same location as the shipping paper. Papers for Division 1.1, 1.2 or 1.3 Class A or B, explosives. A carrier must give each driver transporting Division 1.1, 1.2, or 1.3 Class A or B, explosives a copy of Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations FMCSR, Part 397. The carrier must also give written instructions on what to do if delayed or in an accident. The written instructions must include the names and telephone numbers of people to contact, including carrier agents or shippers. The nature of the explosives transported. The precautions to take in emergencies such as fires, accidents, or leaks. Drivers must sign a receipt for these documents. You must be familiar with and have in your possession while driving the shipping papers. Written emergency instructions. Written route plan. A copy of FMCSR, Part 397. September 6, 11 Equipment for chlorine. A driver transporting chlorine in cargo tanks must have an approved gas mask in the vehicle. The driver must also have an emergency kit for controlling leaks in dome cover plate fittings on the cargo tank. September 6, 12 Stop before railroad crossing. Stop before a railroad crossing if your vehicle is placarded, carries any amount of chlorine, has cargo tanks, whether loaded or empty, used for hazardous materials. You must stop 15 to 50 feet before the nearest rail. Proceed only when you are sure no train is coming. Don't shift gears while crossing the tracks. 9.7. Hazardous materials, emergencies. 9.7.1 Emergency Response Guidebook ERG. The Department of Transportation has a guidebook for firefighters, police, and industry workers on how to protect themselves and the public from hazardous materials. The guide is indexed by proper shipping name and hazardous materials identification number. Emergency personnel look for these things on the shipping paper. That is why it is vital that the proper shipping name, identification number, label, and placards are correct. 9.7.2 Accidents. Incidents. As a professional driver, your job at the scene of an accident is to keep people away from the scene. Limit the spread of material, only if you can safely do so. Communicate the danger of the hazardous materials to emergency response personnel. Provide emergency responders with the shipping papers and emergency response information. Follow this checklist. Check to see that your driving partner is okay. Keep shipping papers with you. Keep people far away and upwind. Warn others of the danger. Send for help. Follow your employer's instructions. 9.7.3 Fires. You might have to control minor truck fires on the road. However, unless you have the training and equipment to do so safely, don't fight hazardous materials fires. Dealing with hazardous materials fires requires special training and protective gear. When you discover a fire, send for help. You may use the fire extinguisher to keep minor truck fires from spreading to cargo before firefighters arrive. Feel trailer doors to see if they are hot before opening them. If hot, you may have a cargo fire and should not open the doors. Opening doors lets air in and may make the fire flare up. Without air, many fires only smolder until firemen arrive, doing less damage. If your cargo is already on fire, it is not safe to fight the fire. Keep the shipping papers with you to give to emergency personnel as soon as they arrive. Warn other people of the danger and keep them away. If you discover a cargo leak, identify the hazardous materials leaking by using shipping papers, labels, or package location. Do not touch any leaking material. Many people injure themselves by touching hazardous materials. Do not try to identify the material or find the source of a leak by smell. Toxic gases can destroy your sense of smell and can injure or kill you even if they don't smell. Never eat, drink, or smoke around a leak or spill. If hazardous materials are spilling from your vehicle, do not move it any more than safety requires. You may move off the road and away from places where people gather, if doing so serves safety. Only move your vehicle if you can do so without danger to yourself or others. Never continue driving with hazardous materials leaking from your vehicle in order to find a phone booth, truck stop, help, or similar reason. Remember, the carrier pays for the cleanup of contaminated parking lots, roadways, and drainage ditches. The costs are enormous, so don't leave a lengthy trail of contamination. If hazardous materials are spilling from your vehicle, park it. Secure the area. Stay there. Send someone else for help. When sending someone for help, give that person a description of the emergency, your exact location and direction of travel, your name, the carrier's name, and the name of the community or city where your terminal is located, the proper shipping name, hazard class, and identification number of the hazardous materials, if you know them. This is a lot for someone to remember. It is a good idea to write it all down for the person you send for help. The emergency response team must know these things to find you and to handle the emergency. They may have to travel miles to get to you. This information will help them to bring the right equipment the first time, without having to go back for it. Never move your vehicle, if doing so will cause contamination or damage the vehicle. Keep downwind and away from roadside rests, truck stops, cafes, and businesses. Never try to repack leaking containers. Unless you have the training and equipment to repair leaks safely, don't try it. Call your dispatcher or supervisor for instructions and, if needed, emergency personnel. 9.7.4 Responses to Specific Hazards Class 1 Explosives. If your vehicle has a breakdown or accident while carrying explosives, warn others of the danger. Keep bystanders away. Do not allow smoking or open fire near the vehicle. If there is a fire, warn everyone of the danger of explosion. Remove all explosives before separating vehicles involved in a collision. Place the explosives at least 200 feet from the vehicles and occupied buildings. Stay a safe distance away. Class 2 Compressed Gases. If compressed gas is leaking from your vehicle, warn others of the danger. Only permit those involved in removing the hazard or rackets to get close. You must notify the shipper if compressed gas is involved in any accident. Unless you are fueling machinery used in road construction or maintenance, do not transfer a flammable compressed gas from one tank to another on any public roadway. Class 3 Flammable Liquids. If you are transporting a flammable liquid and have an accident or your vehicle breaks down, prevent bystanders from gathering. Warn people of the danger. Keep them from smoking. Never transport a leaking cargo tank farther than needed to reach a safe place. Get off the roadway if you can do so safely. Don't transfer a flammable liquid from one vehicle to another on a public roadway except in an emergency. Class 4 Flammable Solids and Class 5 Oxidizing Materials. If a flammable solid or oxidizing material spills, warn others of the fire hazard. Do not open smoldering packages of flammable solids. Remove them from the vehicle if you can safely do so. Also, remove unbroken packages if it will decrease the fire hazard. Class 6 Poisonous Materials and Infectious Substances. It is your job to protect yourself, other people, and property from harm. Remember that many products classed as poison are also flammable. If you think a Division 2.3 poison gases or Division 6.1 poison materials might be flammable, take the added precautions needed for flammable liquids or gases. Do not allow smoking, open flame, or welding. Warn others of the hazards of fire, of inhaling vapors, or coming in contact with the poison. A vehicle involved in a leak of Division 2.3 poison gases or Division 6.1 poisons must be checked for stray poison before being used again. If a Division 6.2 infectious substances package is damaged in handling or transportation, you should immediately contact your supervisor. Packages that appear to be damaged or show signs of leakage should not be accepted. Class 7 Radioactive Materials. If radioactive material is involved in a leak or broken package, tell your dispatcher or supervisor as soon as possible. If there is a spill, or if an internal container might be damaged, do not touch or inhale the material. Do not use the vehicle until it is cleaned and checked with a survey meter. Class 8 Corrosive Materials. If corrosive spill or leak during transportation, be careful to avoid further damage or injury when handling the containers. Parts of the vehicle exposed to a corrosive liquid must be thoroughly washed with water. After unloading, wash out the interior as soon as possible before reloading. If continuing to transport a leaking tank would be unsafe, get off the road. If safe to do so, contain any liquid leaking from the vehicle. Keep bystanders away from the liquid and its fumes. Do everything possible to prevent injury to yourself and to others. 9.7.5 Required Notification. The National Response Center helps coordinate emergency response to chemical hazards. It is a resource to the police and firefighters. It maintains a 24-hour toll-free line. You or your employer must phone when any of the following occur as a direct result of a hazardous materials incident: a person is killed, an injured person requires hospitalization, estimated property damage exceeds $50,000. The general public is evacuated for more than 1 hour. One or more major transportation arteries or facilities are closed for 1 hour or more. Fire, breakage, spillage, or suspected radioactive contamination occurs. Fire, breakage, spillage, or suspected contamination occur involving shipment of etiologic agents, bacteria, or toxins. A situation exists of such a nature, for example, continuing danger to life exists at the scene of an incident that, in the judgment of the carrier, should be reported. National Response Center 800-424-8802. Persons telephoning the National Response Center should be ready to give their name and address of the carrier they work for, phone number where they can be reached, date, time, and location of incident. The extent of injuries, if any. Classification, name, and quantity of hazardous materials involved, if such information is available. Type of incident and nature of hazardous materials involvement and whether a continuing danger to life exists at the scene. If a reportable quantity of hazardous substance was involved, the caller should give the name of the shipper and the quantity of the hazardous substance discharged. Be prepared to give your employer the required information as well. Carriers must make detailed written reports within 30 days of an incident. CHEMTREC 800-424-9300. The Chemical Transportation Emergency Center CHEMTREC in Washington also has a 24-hour toll-free line. CHEMTREC was created to provide emergency personnel with technical information about the physical properties of hazardous materials. The National Response Center and CHEMTREC are in close communication. If you call either one, they will tell the other about the problem when appropriate. Do not leave radioactive yellow, II or yellow, III labeled packages near people, animals, or film longer than shown in Figure 9.10. Classes of hazardous materials. Hazardous materials are categorized into 9 major hazard classes and additional categories for consumer commodities and combustible liquids. The classes of hazardous materials are listed in Figure 9.12. Radioactive separation, Table of Figure 9-10 Hazard Class Definitions, Table B Figure 9-11 Subsections 9.6 and 9.7 Test your knowledge 1. If your placarded trailer has dual tires, how often should you check the tires? 2. What is a safe haven? 3. How close to the traveled part of the roadway can you park with Division 1.2 or 1.3 materials explosive B? 4. How close can you park to a bridge, tunnel, or building with the same load? 5. What type of fire extinguisher must placarded vehicles carry? 6. You're hauling 100 pounds of Division 4.3 Dangerous 1 wet materials. Do you need to stop before a railroad highway crossing? 7. At a rest area you discover your hazardous materials shipment slowly leaking from the vehicle. There is no phone around. What should you do? 8. What is the Emergency Response Guide ERG? These questions may be on your test. If you can't answer them all, reread subsections 9.6 and 9.7. 9.8. Hazardous Materials Glossary. This glossary presents definitions of certain terms used in this section. A complete glossary of terms can be found in the Federal Hazardous Materials Rules 49 CFR 171.8. You should have an up-to-date copy of these rules for your reference. Note, you will not be tested on this glossary. Sec. 171.8 Definitions and Abbreviations. Bulk packaging, packaging, other than a vessel, or a barge, including a transport vehicle or freight container, in which hazardous materials are loaded with no intermediate form of containment and which has, 1. A maximum capacity greater than 450 L 119 gallons as a receptacle for a liquid. 2. A maximum net mass greater than 400 kilograms 882 pounds or maximum capacity greater than 450 L 119 gallons as a receptacle for a solid. Or 3. A water capacity greater than 454 kilograms 1000 pounds as a receptacle for a gas as defined in Sec 173.115. Cargo tank, a bulk package in which, 1. Is a tank intended primarily for the carriage of liquids or gases and includes appurtenances, reinforcements, fittings, and closures for tank, see 49 CFR 178.3451C, 178.3371, or 178.3381, as applicable. 2. Is permanently attached to or forms a part of a motor vehicle, or is not permanently attached to a motor vehicle but which, By reason of its size, construction, or attachment to a motor vehicle is loaded or unloaded without being removed from a motor vehicle. And 3. Is not fabricated under a specification for cylinders, portable tanks, tank cars, or multi-unit tank car tanks. Carrier, a person engaged in the transportation of passengers or property by 1. Land or water as a common, contract, or private carrier, or 2. Civil aircraft. Consignee, the business or person to whom a shipment is delivered. Division, a subdivision of a hazard class. EPA, U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. FMCSR, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations. Freight container, a reusable container having a volume of 64 cubic feet or more, designed and constructed to permit being lifted with its contents intact and intended primarily for containment of packages in unit form during transportation. Fuel tank, a tank, other than a cargo tank, used to transport flammable or combustible liquid or compressed gas for the purpose of supplying fuel for propulsion of the transport vehicle to which it is attached, or for the operation of other equipment on the transport vehicle. Gross weight or gross mass, the weight of a packaging plus the weight of its contents. Hazard class, the category of hazard assigned to a hazardous material under the definitional criteria of Part 173 and the provisions of the Sec 172.101 table. A material may meet the defining criteria for more than one hazard class but is assigned to only one hazard class. Hazardous materials, a substance or material which has been determined by the Secretary of Transportation to be capable of posing an unreasonable risk to health, safety, and property when transported in commerce, and which has been so designated. The term includes hazardous substances, hazardous wastes, marine pollutants, elevated temperature materials and materials designated as hazardous in the Hazardous Materials Table of 72.101, and materials that meet the defining criteria for hazard classes and divisions in 73, subchapter C of this chapter. Hazardous substance, a material, including its mixtures and solutions, that, hazardous substance concentrations figure 9-12-1, is listed in Appendix A to Sec 172.101. 2. Is in a quantity, in one package, which equals or exceeds the reportable quantity RQ listed in Appendix A to Sec 172.101. And 3. When in a mixture or solution 1. For radionuclides, conforms to paragraph 7 of Appendix A to Sec 172.101. 2. For other than radionuclides, is in a concentration by weight which equals or exceeds the concentration corresponding to the RQ of the material, as shown in Figure 9.12. This definition does not apply to petroleum products that are lubricants or fuel C40 CFR 300.6. Hazardous waste, for the purposes of this chapter, means any material that is subject to the hazardous waste manifest requirements of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency specified in 40 CFR Part 262. Intermediate bulk container IBC, a rigid or flexible portable packaging, other than a cylinder or portable tank, which is designed for mechanical handling. Standards for IBCs manufactured in the United States are set forth in Subparts N and O78. Limited quantity, the maximum amount of a hazardous material for which there may be specific labeling or packaging exception. Marking, the descriptive name, identification number, instructions, cautions, weight, specification, or UN marks or combinations thereof, required by this subchapter on outer packaging of hazardous materials. Mixture, a material composed of more than one chemical compound or element. Name of contents, the proper shipping name as specified in Sec 172.101. Non-bulk packaging, a packaging, which has, 1. A maximum capacity of 450 L 119 gallons as a receptacle for a liquid. 2. A maximum net mass less than 400 kilograms 882 pounds and a maximum capacity of 450 L 119 gallons or less as a receptacle for a solid. Or 3. A water capacity greater than 454 kilograms 1000 pounds or less as a receptacle for a gas as defined in Sec 173.115. NO as not otherwise specified. Outage or ullage, the amount by which a packaging falls short of being liquid full, usually expressed in percent by volume. Portable tank, bulk packaging except a cylinder having a water capacity of 1,000 pounds or less designed primarily to be loaded onto, or on, or temporarily attached to a transport vehicle or ship and equipped with skids, mountings, or accessories to facilitate handling of the tank by mechanical means. It does not include a cargo tank, tank car, multi-unit tank car tank, or trailer carrying 3X, 3AAX, or 3T cylinders. Proper shipping name, the name of the hazardous materials shown in Roman print not italics in Sec 172.101. PSI or SI, pounds per square inch. PSIA or SHA, pounds per square inch absolute. Reportable quantity RQ, the quantity specified in column 2 of the appendix to Sec 172.101 for any material identified in column 1 of the appendix. RSPA, the Research and Special Programs Administration, U.S. Department of Transportation, Washington, D.C., 20590. Shipper's certification, a statement on a shipping paper, signed by the shipper, saying he/she prepared the shipment properly according to law. For example, this is to certify that the above-named materials are properly classified, described, packaged, marked and labeled, and are in proper condition for transportation according to the applicable regulations or the Department of Transportation. Or I hereby declare that the contents of this consignment are fully and accurately described above by the proper shipping name and are classified, packaged, marked and labeled placarded, and are in all respects in proper condition for transport by according to applicable international and national government regulations. Words may be inserted here to indicate mode of transportation: rail, aircraft, motor vehicle, vessel, shipping paper, a shipping order, bill of lading, manifest, or other shipping document serving a similar purpose and containing the information required by Sec 172.202, 172.203, and 172.204. Technical name, a recognized chemical name or microbiological name currently used in scientific and technical handbooks, journals, and texts. Transport vehicle, a cargo-carrying vehicle such as an automobile, van, tractor, truck, semi-trailer, tank car, or rail car used for the transportation of cargo by any mode. Each cargo-carrying body trailer, rail car, etc. is a separate transport vehicle. UN Standard Packaging, a specification packaging conforming to the standards in the UN recommendations. UN, United Nations. It takes time to recover from this blindness. Older drivers are especially bothered by glare. Most people have been temporarily blinded by camera flash units or by the high beams of an oncoming vehicle. It can take several seconds to recover from glare. Even 2 seconds of glare blindness can be dangerous. A vehicle going 55 mph will travel more than half the distance of a football field during that time. Don't look directly at bright lights when driving. Look at the right side of the road. Watch the sidelines when someone coming toward you has very bright lights on. Fatigue and lack of alertness. Fatigue being tired and lack of alertness are bigger problems at night. The body's need for sleep is beyond a person's control. Most people are less alert at night, especially after midnight. This is particularly true if you have been driving for a long time. Drivers may not see hazards as soon, or react as quickly, so the chance of a crash is greater. If you are sleepy, The only safe cure is to get off the road and get some sleep. If you don't, you risk your life and the lives of others. 2.11.3 Roadway factors poor lighting. In the daytime there is usually enough light to see well. This is not true at night. Some areas may have bright street lights, but many areas will have poor lighting. On most roads you will probably have to depend entirely on your headlights. Less light means you will not be able to see hazards as well as in daytime. Road users who do not have lights are hard to see. There are many accidents at night involving pedestrians, joggers, bicyclists, and animals. Even when there are lights, the road scene can be confusing. Traffic signals and hazards can be hard to see against a background of signs, shop windows, and other lights. Drive slower when lighting is poor or confusing. Drive slowly enough to be sure you can stop in the distance you can see ahead. Drunk drivers. Drunk drivers and drivers under the influence of drugs are a hazard to themselves and to you. Be especially alert around the closing times for bars and taverns. Watch for drivers who have trouble staying in their lane or maintaining speed, who stop without reason, or show other signs of being under the influence of alcohol or drugs. 2.11.4 Vehicle factors headlights. At night your headlights will usually be the main source of light for you to see by and for others to see you. You can't see nearly as much with your headlights as you see in the daytime. With low beams you can see ahead about 250 feet and with high beams about 350-500 feet. You must adjust your speed to keep your stopping distance within your sight distance. This means going slowly enough to be able to stop within the range of your headlights. Otherwise, by the time you see a hazard, you will not have time to stop. Night driving can be more dangerous if you have problems with your headlights. Dirty headlights may give only half the light they should. This cuts down your ability to see, and makes it harder for others to see you. Make sure your lights are clean and working. Headlights can be out of adjustment. If they don't point in the right direction, they won't give you a good view and they can blind other drivers. Have a qualified person make sure they are adjusted properly. Other lights. In order for you to be seen easily, the following must be clean and working properly: reflectors, marker lights, clearance lights, tail lights, identification lights, turn signals and brake lights. At night your turn signals and brake lights are even more important for telling other drivers what you intend to do. Make sure you have clean, working turn signals and stop lights. Windshield and mirrors. It is more important at night than in the daytime to have a clean windshield and clean mirrors. Bright lights at night can cause dirt on your windshield or mirrors to create a glare of its own, blocking your view. Most people have experienced driving toward the sun just as it has risen or is about to set, and found that they can barely see through a windshield that seemed to look okay in the middle of the day. Clean your windshield on the inside and outside for safe driving at night. 2.11.5 Night driving procedures. Pre-trip procedures. Make sure you are rested and alert. If you are drowsy, sleep before you drive. Even a nap can save your life or the lives of others. If you wear eyeglasses, make sure they are clean and unscratched. Don't wear sunglasses at night. Do a complete pre-trip inspection of your vehicle. Pay attention to checking all lights and reflectors, and cleaning those you can reach. Avoid blinding others. Glare from your headlights can cause problems for drivers coming toward you. They can also bother drivers going in the same direction you are, when your lights shine in their rearview mirrors. Dim your lights before they cause glare for other drivers. Dim your lights within 500 feet of an oncoming vehicle and when following another vehicle within 500 feet. Avoid glare from oncoming vehicles. Do not look directly at lights of oncoming vehicles. Look slightly to the right at a right lane or edge marking, if available. If other drivers don't put their low beams on, don't try to get back at them by putting your own high beams on. This increases glare for oncoming drivers and increases the chance of a crash. Use high beams when you can. Some drivers make the mistake of always using low beams. This seriously cuts down on their ability to see ahead. Use high beams when it is safe and legal to do so. Use them when you are not within 500 feet of an approaching vehicle. Also, don't let the inside of your cab get too bright. This makes it harder to see outside. Keep the interior light off, and adjust your instrument lights as low as you can to still be able to read the gauges. If you get sleepy, stop driving at the nearest safe place. People often don't realize how close they are to falling asleep even when their eyelids are falling shut. If you can safely do so, look at yourself in a mirror. If you look sleepy, or you just feel sleepy, stop driving. You are in a very dangerous condition. The only safe cure is to sleep. 2.12. Driving in fog. Fog can occur at any time. Fog on highways can be extremely dangerous. Fog is often unexpected, and visibility can deteriorate rapidly. You should watch for foggy conditions and be ready to reduce your speed. Do not assume that the fog will thin out after you enter it. The best advice for driving in fog is don't. It is preferable that you pull off the road into a rest area or truck stop until visibility is better. If you must drive, be sure to consider the following. Obey all fog-related warning signs. Slow down before you enter fog. Use low-beam headlights and fog lights for best visibility even in daytime, and be alert for other drivers who may have forgotten to turn on their lights. Turn on your four-way flashers. This will give vehicles approaching you from behind a quicker opportunity to notice your vehicle. Watch for vehicles on the side of the roadway. Seeing taillights or headlights in front of you may not be a true indication of where the road is ahead of you. The vehicle may not be on the road at all. Use roadside highway reflectors as guides to determine how the road may curve ahead of you. Listen for traffic you cannot see. Avoid passing other vehicles. Don't stop along the side of the road, unless absolutely necessary. 2.13. Driving in winter. 2.13.1 Vehicle checks. Make sure your vehicle is ready before driving in winter weather. You should make a regular pre-trip inspection, paying extra attention to the following items. Coolant level and antifreeze amount. Make sure the cooling system is full and there is enough antifreeze in the system to protect against freezing. This can be checked with a special coolant tester. Defrosting and heating equipment. Make sure the defrosters work. They are needed for safe driving. Make sure the heater is working, and that you know how to operate it. If you use other heaters and expect to need them, for example, mirror heaters, battery box heaters, fuel tank heaters, check their operation. Wipers and washers. Make sure the windshield wiper blades are in good condition. Make sure the wiper blades press against the window hard enough to wipe the windshield clean, otherwise they may not sweep off snow properly. Make sure the windshield washer works and there is washing fluid in the washer reservoir. Use windshield washer antifreeze to prevent freezing of the washer liquid. If you can't see well enough while driving, for example, if your wipers fail, stop safely and fix the problem. Tires. Make sure you have enough tread on your tires. The drive tires must provide traction to push the rig over wet pavement and through snow. The steering tires must have traction to steer the vehicle. Enough tread is especially important in winter conditions. You must have at least 4/32 inch tread depth in every major groove on front tires and at least 2/32 inch on other tires. More would be better. Use a gauge to determine if you have enough tread for safe driving. Tire chains. You may find yourself in conditions where you can't drive without chains, even to get to a place of safety. Carry the right number of chains and extra cross links. Make sure they will fit your drive tires. Check the chains for broken hooks, worn or broken cross links, and bent or broken side chains. Learn how to put the chains on before you need to do it in snow and ice. Lights and reflectors. Make sure the lights and reflectors are clean. Lights and reflectors are especially important during bad weather. Check from time to time during bad weather to make sure they are clean and working properly. Windows and mirrors. Remove any ice, snow, etc. from the windshield, windows, and mirrors before starting. Use a windshield scraper, snow brush, and windshield defroster as necessary. Handholds, steps, and deck plates. Remove all ice and snow from handholds, steps, and deck plates. This will reduce the danger of slipping. Radiator shutters and winter front. Remove ice from the radiator shutters. Make sure the winter front is not closed too tightly. If the shutters freeze shut or the winter front is closed too much, the engine may overheat and stop. Exhaust system. Exhaust system leaks are especially dangerous when cab ventilation may be poor, windows rolled up, etc. Loose connections could permit poisonous carbon monoxide to leak into your vehicle. Carbon monoxide gas will cause you to be sleepy. In large enough amounts, it can kill you. Check the exhaust system for loose parts and for sounds and signs of leaks. 2.1.3.2 Driving slippery surfaces. Drive slowly and smoothly on slippery roads. If it is very slippery, you shouldn't drive at all. At the first safe place, start gently and slowly. When first starting, get the feel of the road. Don't hurry. Check for ice. Check for ice on the road, especially bridges and overpasses. A lack of spray from other vehicles indicates ice has formed on the road. Also, check your mirrors and wiper blades for ice. If they have ice, the road most likely will be icy as well. Adjust turning and braking to conditions. Make turns as gently as possible. Don't brake any harder than necessary, and don't use the engine brake or speed retarder. They can cause the driving wheels to skid on slippery surfaces. Adjust speed to conditions. Don't pass lower vehicles unless necessary. Go slowly and watch far enough ahead to keep a steady speed. Avoid having to slow down and speed up. Take curves at slower speeds and don't brake while in curves. Be aware that as the temperature rises to the point where ice begins to melt, the road becomes even more slippery. Slow down more. Adjust space to conditions. Don't drive alongside other vehicles. Keep a longer following distance. When you see a traffic jam ahead, slow down or stop to wait for it to clear. Try hard to anticipate stops early and slow down gradually. Watch for snowplows, as well as salt and sand trucks, and give them plenty of room. Wet brakes. When driving in heavy rain or deep standing water, your brakes will get wet. Water in the brakes can cause the brakes to be weak, to apply unevenly, or to grab. This can cause lack of braking power, wheel lock cups, pulling to one side or the other, and jackknife if you pull a trailer. Avoid driving through deep puddles or flowing water if possible. If not, you should slow down and place transmission in a low gear. Gently put on the brakes. This presses linings against brake drums or discs and keeps mud, silt, sand, and water from getting in, increase engine RPM and cross the water while keeping light pressure on the brakes. When out of the water, maintain light pressure on the brakes for a short distance to heat them up and dry them out. Make a test stop when safe to do so. Check behind to make sure no one is following, then apply the brakes to be sure they work well. If not, dry them out further as described above. Caution, do not apply too much brake pressure and accelerator at the same time, or you can overheat brake drums and linings. 2.14. Driving in very hot weather 2.14.1 Vehicle checks. Do a normal pre-trip inspection, but pay special attention to the following items. Tires. Check the tire mounting and air pressure. Inspect the tires every 2 hours or every 100 miles when driving in very hot weather. Air pressure increases with temperature. Do not let air out or the pressure will be too low when the tires cool off. If a tire is too hot to touch, remain stopped until the tire cools off. Otherwise, the tire may blow out or catch fire. Engine oil. The engine oil helps keep the engine cool, as well as lubricating it. Make sure there is enough engine oil. If you have an oil temperature gauge, make sure the temperature is within the proper range while you are driving. Engine coolant. Before starting out, make sure the engine cooling system has enough water and antifreeze according to the engine manufacturer's directions. Antifreeze helps the engine under hot conditions as well as cold conditions. When driving, check the water temperature or coolant temperature gauge from time to time. Make sure that it remains in the normal range. If the gauge goes above the highest safe temperature, there may be something wrong that could lead to engine failure and possibly fire. Stop driving as soon as safely possible and try to find out what is wrong. Some vehicles have sight glasses, see-through coolant overflow containers, or coolant recovery containers. These permit you to check the coolant level while the engine is hot. If the container is not part of the pressurized system, the cap can be safely removed and coolant added even when the engine is at operating temperature. Never remove the radiator cap or any part of the pressurized system until the system has cooled. Steam and boiling water can spray under pressure and cause severe burns. If you can touch the radiator cap with your bare hand, it is probably cool enough to open. If coolant has to be added to a system without a recovery tank or overflow tank, follow these steps. Shut engine off. Wait until engine has cooled. Protect hands. Use gloves or a thick cloth. Turn radiator cap slowly to the first stop, which releases the pressure seal. Step back while pressure is released from cooling system. When all pressure has been released, press down on the cap and turn it further to remove it. Visually check level of coolant and add more coolant if necessary. Replace cap and turn all the way to the closed position. Engine belts. Learn how to check V-belt tightness on your vehicle by pressing on the belts. Loose belts will not turn the water pump and/or fan properly. This will result in overheating. Also, check belts for cracking or other signs of wear. Hoses. Make sure coolant hoses are in good condition. A broken hose while driving can lead to engine failure and even fire. 2.14.2 Driving watch for bleeding tar. Tar in the road pavement frequently rises to the surface in very hot weather. Spots where tar bleeds to the surface are very slippery. Go slowly enough to prevent overheating. High speeds create more heat for tires and the engine. In desert conditions, the heat may build up to the point where it is dangerous. The heat will increase chances of tire failure or even fire, and engine failure. Subsection 2.11, 2.12, 2.13, and 2.14 test your knowledge. 1. You should use low beams whenever you can. True or false? 2. What should you do before you drive if you are drowsy? 3. What effects can wet brakes cause? How can you avoid these problems? 4. You should let air out of hot tires so the pressure goes back to normal. True or false? 5. You can safely remove the radiator cap as long as the engine isn't overheated. True or false? These questions may be on the test. If you can't answer all of them, reread subsections 2.11, 2.12, 2.13, and 2.14, 2.15. Railroad highway crossings. Railroad highway grade crossings are a special kind of intersection where the roadway crosses train tracks. These crossings are always dangerous. Every such crossing must be approached with the expectation that a train is coming. 2.15.1 Types of crossings. Passive crossings. This type of crossing does not have any type of traffic control device. The decision to stop or proceed rests entirely in your hands. Passive crossings require you to recognize the crossing, search for any train using the tracks and decide if there is sufficient clear space to cross safely. Passive crossings have yellow circular advance warning signs, pavement markings and crossbucks to assist you in recognizing a crossing. Active crossings. This type of crossing has a traffic control device installed at the crossing to regulate traffic at the crossing. These active devices include flashing red lights, with or without bells, and flashing red lights with bells and gates. 2.15.2 Warning signs and devices. Advance warning signs. The round, black on yellow warning sign is placed ahead of a public railroad highway crossing. The advance warning sign tells you to slow down, look and listen for the train, and be prepared to stop at the tracks if a train is coming. See Figure 2.15. Pavement markings. Pavement markings mean the same as the advance warning sign. They consist of an with the letters R and a no passing marking on two-lane roads. See Figure 2.16. There is also a no passing zone sign on two-lane roads. There may be a white stop line painted on the pavement before the railroad tracks. The front of the school bus must remain behind this line while stopped at the crossing. Round yellow warning sign. Figure 2-15 pavement markings. Figure 2-16 crossbuck signs. This sign marks the grade crossing. It requires you to yield the right of way to the train. If there is no white line painted on the pavement, you must stop the bus before the crossbuck sign. When the road crosses over more than one set of tracks, a sign below the crossbuck indicates the number of tracks. See Figure 2.17. Flashing red light signals. At many highway rail grade crossings, the crossbuck sign has flashing red lights and bells. When the lights begin to flash, stop. A train is approaching. You are required to yield the right of way to the train. If there is more than one track, make sure all tracks are clear before crossing. See Figure 2.18. Gates. Many railroad highway crossings have gates with flashing red lights and bells. Stop when the lights begin to flash and before the gate lowers across the road lane. Remain stopped until the gates go up and the lights have stopped flashing. Proceed when it is safe. See Figure 2.18. Multiple tracks. Figure 2-17 gates lights. Figure 2-18 2.15.3 Driving procedures. Never race a train to a crossing. Never attempt to race a train to a crossing. It is extremely difficult to judge the speed of an approaching train. Reduce speed. Speed must be reduced in accordance with your ability to see approaching trains in any direction, and speed must be held to a point which will permit you to stop short of the tracks in case a stop is necessary. Don't expect to hear a train. Because of noise inside your vehicle, you cannot expect to hear the train horn until the train is dangerously close to the crossing. Don't rely on signals. You should not rely solely upon the presence of warning signals, gates, or flagmen to warn of the approach of trains. Be especially alert at crossings that do not have gates or flashing red light signals. Double tracks require a double check. Remember that a train on one track may hide a train on the other track. Look both ways before crossing. After one train has cleared a crossing, be sure no other trains are near before starting across the tracks. Yard areas and grade crossings in cities and towns. Yard areas and grade crossings in cities and towns are just as dangerous as rural grade crossings. Approach them with as much caution. 2.15.4 Stopping safely at railroad highway crossings. A full stop is required at grade crossings whenever, The nature of the cargo makes a stop mandatory under state or federal regulations. Such a stop is otherwise required by law. When stopping, be sure to check for traffic behind you while stopping gradually. Use a pull-out lane, if available. Turn on your four-way emergency flashers. 2.15.5 Crossing the tracks. Railroad crossings with steep approaches can cause your unit to hang up on the tracks. Never permit traffic conditions to trap you in a position where you have to stop on the tracks. Be sure you can get all the way across the tracks before you start across. It takes a typical tractor-trailer unit at least 14 seconds to clear a single track and more than 15 seconds to clear a double track. Do not shift gears while crossing railroad tracks. 2.15.6 Special Situations. Be aware. These trailers can get stuck on raised crossings, low slung units, low boy, car carrier, moving van, possum belly livestock trailer. Single axle tractor pulling a long trailer with its landing gear set to accommodate a tandem axle tractor. If for any reason you get stuck on the tracks, get out of the vehicle and away from the tracks. Check signposts or signal housing at the crossing for emergency notification information. Call 911 or other emergency number. Give the location of the crossing using all identifiable landmarks, especially the DOT number, if posted. 2.16. Mountain driving. In mountain driving, gravity plays a major role. On any upgrade, gravity slows you down. The steeper the grade, the longer the grade, and or the heavier the load, the more you will have to use lower gears to climb hills or mountains. In coming down long, steep downgrades, gravity causes the speed of your vehicle to increase. You must select an appropriate safe speed, then use a low gear and proper braking techniques. You should plan ahead and obtain information about any long, steep grades along your planned route of travel. If possible, talk to other drivers who are familiar with the grades to find out what speeds are safe. You must go slowly enough so your brakes can hold you back without getting too hot. If the brakes become too hot, they may start to fade. This means you have to apply them harder and harder to get the same stopping power. If you continue to use the brakes hard, they can keep fading until you cannot slow down or stop at all. 2.16.1 Select a safe speed. Your most important consideration is to select a speed that is not too fast for the total weight of the vehicle and cargo. Length of the grade. Steepness of the grade. Road conditions. Weather. If a speed limit is posted, or there is a sign indicating maximum safe speed, never exceed the speed shown. Also, look for and heed warning signs indicating the length and steepness of the grade. You must use the braking effect of the engine as the principal way of controlling your speed. The braking effect of the engine is greatest when it is near the governed RPMs and the transmission is in the lower gears. Save your brakes so you will be able to slow or stop as required by road and traffic conditions. 2.16.2 Select the right gear before starting down the grade. Shift the transmission to a low gear before starting down the grade. Do not try to downshift after your speed has already built up. You will not be able to shift into a lower gear. You may not even be able to get back into any gear and all engine braking effect will be lost. Forcing an automatic transmission into a lower gear at high speed could damage the transmission and also lead to loss of all engine braking effect. With older trucks, a rule for choosing gears is to use the same gear going down a hill that you would need to climb the hill. However, new trucks have low friction parts and streamlined shapes for fuel economy. They may also have more powerful engines. This means they can go up hills in higher gears and have less friction and air drag to hold them back going down hills. For that reason, drivers of modern trucks may have to use lower gears going down a hill than would be required to go up the hill. You should know what is right for your vehicle. 2.16.3 Brake fading or failure. Brakes are designed so brake shoes or pads rub against the brake drum or discs to slow the vehicle. Braking creates heat, but brakes are designed to take a lot of heat. However, brakes can fade or fail from excessive heat caused by using them too much and not relying on the engine braking effect. Brake fade is also affected by adjustment. To safely control a vehicle, every brake must do its share of the work. Brakes out of adjustment will stop doing their share before those that are in adjustment. The other brakes can then overheat and fade, and there will not be enough braking available to control the vehicle. Brakes can get out of adjustment quickly, especially when they are used a lot. Also, brake linings wear faster when they are hot. Therefore, brake adjustment must be checked frequently. 2.16.4 Proper braking technique. Remember, the use of brakes on a long and or steep downgrade is only a supplement to the braking effect of the engine. Once the vehicle is in the proper low gear, the following is the proper braking technique. Apply the brakes just hard enough to feel a definite slowdown. When your speed has been reduced to approximately 5 mph below your safe speed, release the brakes. This brake application should last for about 3 seconds. When your speed has increased to your safe speed, repeat steps 1 and 2. For example, if your safe speed is 40 mph, you would not apply the brakes until your speed reaches 40 mph. You now apply the brakes hard enough to gradually reduce your speed to 35 mph and then release the brakes. Repeat this as often as necessary until you have reached the end of the downgrade. Escape ramps have been built on many steep mountain downgrades. Escape ramps are made to stop runaway vehicles safely without injuring drivers and passengers. Escape ramps use a long bed of loose, soft material to slow a runaway vehicle, sometimes in combination with an upgrade. No escape ramp locations on your route. Signs show drivers where ramps are located. Escape ramps save lives, equipment and cargo. Subsection 2.15 and 2.16 Test your knowledge. 1. What factors determine your selection of a safe speed when going down a long, steep downgrade? 2. Why should you be in the proper gear before starting down a hill? 3. Describe the proper braking technique when going down a long, steep downgrade. 4. What type of vehicles can get stuck on a railroad highway crossing? 5. How long does it take for a typical tractor-trailer unit to clear a double track? These questions may be on the test. If you can't answer them all, reread subsections 2.15 and 2.16 2.17. Driving emergencies. Traffic emergencies occur when two vehicles are about to collide. Vehicle emergencies occur when tires, brakes, or other critical parts fail. Following the safety practices in this manual can help prevent emergencies. But if an emergency does happen, your chances of avoiding a crash depend upon how well you take action. Actions you can take are discussed below. 2.17.1 Steering to avoid a crash. Stopping is not always the safest thing to do in an emergency. When you don't have enough room to stop, you may have to steer away from what's ahead. Remember, you can almost always turn to miss an obstacle more quickly than you can stop. However, top heavy vehicles and tractors with multiple trailers may flip over. Keep both hands on the steering wheel. In order to turn quickly, you must have a firm grip on the steering wheel with both hands. The best way to have both hands on the wheel, if there is an emergency, is to keep them there all the time. How to turn quickly and safely? A quick turn can be made safely, if it's done the right way. Here are some points that safe drivers use. Do not apply the brake while you are turning. It's very easy to lock your wheels while turning. If that happens, you may skid out of control. Do not turn any more than needed to clear whatever is in your way. The more sharply you turn, the greater the chances of a skid or rollover. Be prepared to counter-steer, that is, to turn the wheel back in the other direction, once you've passed whatever was in your path. Unless you are prepared to counter-steer, you won't be able to do it quickly enough. You should think of emergency steering and counter-steering as two parts of one driving action. Where to steer? If an oncoming driver has drifted into your lane, a move to your right is best. If that driver realizes what has happened, the natural response will be to return to his or her own lane. If something is blocking your path, the best direction to steer will depend on the situation. If you have been using your mirrors, you'll know which lane is empty and can be safely used. If the shoulder is clear, going right may be best. No one is likely to be driving on the shoulder, but someone may be passing you on the left. You will know if you have been using your mirrors. If you are blocked on both sides, a move to the right may be best. At least you won't force anyone into an opposing traffic lane and a possible head-on collision. Leaving the road. In some emergencies, you may have to drive off the road. It may be less risky than facing a collision with another vehicle. Most shoulders are strong enough to support the weight of a large vehicle and, therefore, offer an available escape route. Here are some guidelines, if you do leave the road. Avoid braking. If possible, avoid using the brakes until your speed has dropped to about 20 mph. Then brake very gently to avoid skidding on a loose surface. Keep one set of wheels on the pavement, if possible. This helps to maintain control. Stay on the shoulder. If the shoulder is clear, stay on it until your vehicle has come to a stop. Signal and check your mirrors before pulling back onto the road. Returning to the road. If you are forced to return to the road before you can stop, use the following procedure. Hold the wheel tightly and turn sharply enough to get right back on the road safely. Don't try to edge gradually back on the road. If you do, your tires might grab unexpectedly and you could lose control. When both front tires are on the paved surface, counter-steer immediately. The two turns should be made as a single-steer counter-steer move. 2.17.2 How to stop quickly and safely. If somebody suddenly pulls out in front of you, your natural response is to hit the brakes. This is a good response if there's enough distance to stop, and you use the brakes correctly. You should brake in a way that will keep your vehicle in a straight line and allow you to turn if it becomes necessary. You can use the controlled braking method or the stab braking method. Controlled braking. With this method, you apply the brakes as hard as you can without locking the wheels. Keep steering wheel movements very small while doing this. If you need to make a larger steering adjustment or if the wheels lock, release the brakes. Reapply the brakes as soon as you can. Stab braking. Apply your brakes all the way. Release brakes when wheels lock up. As soon as the wheels start rolling, apply the brakes fully again. It can take up to 1 second for the wheels to start rolling after you release the brakes. If you reapply the brakes before the wheels start rolling, the vehicle won't straighten out. Don't jam on the brakes. Emergency braking does not mean pushing down on the brake pedal as hard as you can. That will only keep the wheels locked up and cause a skid. If the wheels are skidding, you cannot control the vehicle. 2.17.3 Brake failure. Brakes kept in good condition rarely fail. Most hydraulic brake failures occur for one of two reasons. Air brakes are discussed in Section 5. Loss of hydraulic pressure. Brake fade on long hills. Loss of hydraulic pressure. When the system won't build up pressure, the brake pedal will feel spongy or go to the floor. Here are some things you can do. Downshift. Putting the vehicle into a lower gear will help to slow the vehicle. Pump the brakes. Sometimes pumping the brake pedal will generate enough hydraulic pressure to stop the vehicle. Use the parking brake. The parking or emergency brake is separate from the hydraulic brake system. Therefore, It can be used to slow the vehicle. However, be sure to press the release button or pull the release lever at the same time you use the emergency brake so you can adjust the brake pressure and keep the wheels from locking up. Find an escape route. While slowing the vehicle, look for an escape route, an open field, side street, or escape ramp. Turning uphill is a good way to slow and stop the vehicle. Make sure the vehicle does not start rolling backward after you stop. Put it in low gear, apply the parking brake, and, if necessary, roll back into some obstacle that will stop the vehicle. Brake failure on downgrades. Going slow enough and braking properly will almost always prevent brake failure on long downgrades. Once the brakes have failed, however, you are going to have to look outside your vehicle for something to stop it. Your best hope is an escape ramp. If there is one, there'll be signs telling you about it. Use it. Ramps are usually located a few miles from the top of the downgrade. Every year, hundreds of drivers avoid injury to themselves or damage to their vehicles by using escape ramps. Some escape ramps use soft gravel that resists the motion of the vehicle and brings it to a stop. Others turn uphill, using the hill to stop the vehicle and soft gravel to hold it in place. Any driver who loses brakes going downhill should use an escape ramp if it's available. If you don't use it, your chances of having a serious crash may be much greater. If no escape ramp is available, take the least hazardous escape route you can, such as an open field or a side road that flattens out or turns uphill. Make the move as soon as you know your brakes don't work. The longer you wait, the faster the vehicle will go, and the harder it will be to stop. 2.17.4 Tire Failure. Recognize tire failure. Quickly knowing you have a tire failure will let you have more time to react. Having just a few extra seconds to remember what it is you're supposed to do can help you. The major signs of tire failure are sound. The loud bang of a blowout is an easily recognized sign. Because it can take a few seconds for your vehicle to react, you might think it was some other vehicle. But any time you hear a tire blow, you'd be safest to assume it is yours. Vibration. If the vehicle thumps or vibrates heavily, it may be a sign that one of the tires has gone flat. With a rear tire, that may be the only sign you get. Feel. If the steering feels heavy, it is probably a sign that one of the front tires has failed. Sometimes, failure of a rear tire will cause the vehicle to slide back and forth or fishtail. However, dual rear tires usually prevent this. Respond to tire failure. When a tire fails, your vehicle is in danger. You must immediately hold the steering wheel firmly. If a front tire fails, it can twist the steering wheel out of your hand. The only way to prevent this is to keep a firm grip on the steering wheel with both hands at all times. Stay off the brake. It's natural to want to brake in an emergency. However, braking when a tire has failed could cause loss of control. Unless you're about to run into something, stay off the brake until the vehicle has slowed down. Then brake very gently, pull off the road, and stop. Check the tires. After you've come to a stop, get out and check all the tires. Do this even if the vehicle seems to be handling all right. If one of your dual tires goes, the only way you may know it is by getting out and looking at it. 2.18. Anti-lock braking systems. ABS. ABS is a computerized system that keeps your wheels from locking up during hard brake applications. ABS is in addition to your normal brakes. It does not decrease or increase your normal braking capability. ABS only activates when wheels are about to lock up. ABS does not necessarily shorten your stopping distance, but it does help you keep the vehicle under control during hard braking. 2.18.1 How anti-lock braking systems work. Sensors detect potential wheel lockup. An electronic control unit ECU will then decrease brake pressure to avoid wheel lockup. Brake pressure is adjusted to provide the maximum braking without danger of lockup. ABS works far faster than the driver can respond to potential wheel lockup. At all other times, the brake system will operate normally. 2.18.2 Vehicles required to have anti-lock braking systems. The Department of Transportation requires that ABS be on truck tractors with air brakes built on or after March 1, 1997. Other air brake vehicles, trucks, buses, trailers, and converter dollies built on or after March 1, 1998. Hydraulically braked trucks and buses with a gross vehicle weight rating of 10,000 pounds or more built on or after March 1, 1999. Many commercial vehicles built before these dates have been voluntarily equipped with ABS. 2.18.3 How to know if your vehicle is equipped with ABS. Tractors, trucks, and buses will have yellow ABS malfunction lamps on the instrument panel. Trailers will have yellow ABS malfunction lamps on the left side, either on the front or rear corner. Dollies manufactured on or after March 1, 1998, are required to have a lamp on the left side. As a system check on newer vehicles, the malfunction lamp comes on at startup for a bulb check, and then goes out quickly. On older systems, the lamp could stay on until you are driving over 5 mph. If the lamp stays on after the bulb check, or goes on once you are underway, you may have lost ABS control. In the case of towed units manufactured before it was required by the Department of Transportation, it may be difficult to tell if the unit is equipped with ABS. Look under the vehicle for the ECU and wheel speed sensor wires coming from the back of the brakes. 2.18.4 How ABS helps you when you brake hard on slippery surfaces. In a vehicle without ABS, your wheels may lock up. When your steering wheels lock up, you lose steering control. When your other wheels lock up, you may skid, jackknife, or even spin the vehicle. ABS helps you avoid wheel lockup and maintain control. You may or may not be able to stop faster with ABS, but you should be able to steer around an obstacle while braking and avoid skids caused by over-braking. 2.18.5 ABS on the tractor only or only on the trailer. Having ABS on only the tractor, only the trailer, or even on only one axle still gives you more control over the vehicle during braking. Brake normally. When only the tractor has ABS, you should be able to maintain steering control, and there is less chance of jacknifing. But keep your eye on the trailer and let up on the brakes if you can safely do so if it begins to swing out. When only the trailer has ABS, the trailer is less likely to swing out, but if you lose steering control or start a tractor jackknife, let up on the brakes if you can safely do so until you regain control. 2.18.6 Braking with ABS. When you drive a vehicle with ABS, you should brake as you always have. In other words, use only the braking force necessary to stop safely and stay in control. Brake the same way, regardless of whether you have ABS on the bus, tractor, the trailer, or both. As you slow down, monitor your tractor and trailer and back off the brakes if it is safe to do so to stay in control. There is only one exception to this procedure. If you drive a straight truck or combination with working ABS on all axles, in an emergency stop, you can fully apply the brakes. 2.18.7 Braking. If ABS is not working, without ABS you still have normal brake functions. Drive and brake as you always have. Vehicles with ABS have yellow malfunction lamps to tell you if something isn't working. As a system check on newer vehicles, the malfunction lamp comes on at startup for a bulb check and then goes out quickly. On older systems, the lamp could stay on until you are driving over 5 mph. If the lamp stays on after the bulb check, or goes on once you are underway, you may have lost ABS control on one or more wheels. Remember, if your ABS malfunctions, you still have regular brakes. Drive normally, but get the system serviced soon. 2.18.8 Safety Reminders. ABS won't allow you to drive faster, follow more closely, or drive less carefully. ABS won't prevent power or turning skids. BS should prevent brake-induced skids or jackknifes, but not those caused by spinning the drive wheels or going too fast in a turn. ABS won't necessarily shorten stopping distance. ABS will help maintain vehicle control, but not always shorten stopping distance. ABS won't increase or decrease ultimate stopping power. BS is indeed onto your normal brakes, not a replacement for them. ABS won't change the way you normally brake. Under normal brake conditions, your vehicle will stop as it always stopped. ABS only comes into play when a wheel would normally have locked up because of over-braking. ABS won't compensate for bad brakes or poor brake maintenance. Remember, the best vehicle safely feature is still a safe driver. Remember, drive so you never need to use your ABS. Remember, if you need it, ABS could help to prevent a serious crash. 2.19. Skid control and recovery. A skid happens whenever the tires lose their grip on the road. This is caused in one of four ways: over-braking, braking too hard and locking up the wheels. Skids also can occur when using the speed retarder when the road is slippery. Oversteering, turning the wheels more sharply than the vehicle can turn. Overacceleration, supplying too much power to the drive wheels, causing them to spin. Driving too fast. Most serious skids result from driving too fast for road conditions. Drivers who adjust their driving to conditions don't over-accelerate and don't have to over-brake or oversteer from too much speed. 2.19.1 Drive well skids. Tractor jackknife. Figure 2-19. By far the most common skid is one in which the rear wheels lose traction through excessive braking or acceleration. Skids caused by acceleration usually happen on ice or snow. Taking your foot off the accelerator can easily stop them. If it is very slippery, push the clutch in. Otherwise, the engine can keep the wheels from rolling freely and regaining traction. Rear wheel braking skids occur when the rear drive wheels lock. Because locked wheels have less traction than rolling wheels, the rear wheels usually slide sideways in an attempt to catch up with the front wheels. In a bus or stray truck, the vehicle will slide sideways in a spin-out. With vehicles towing trailers, a drive well skid can let the trailer push the towing vehicle sideways, causing a sudden jackknife. See Figure 2.19. 2.19.2 Correcting a drive well braking skid. Do the following to correct a drive well braking skid. Stop braking. This will let the rear wheels roll again and keep the rear wheels from sliding any counter-steer. As a vehicle turns back on course, it has a tendency to keep on turning. Unless you turn the steering wheel quickly the other way, you may find yourself skidding in the opposite direction. Learning to stay off the brake, turn the steering wheel quickly, push in the clutch, and counter-steer in a skid takes a lot of practice. The best place to get this practice is on a large driving range or skid pad. 2.19.3 Front wheel skids. Driving too fast for conditions causes most front wheel skids. Other causes include lack of tread on the front tires and cargo loaded so not enough weight is on the front axle. In a front wheel skid, the front end tends to go in a straight line regardless of how much you turn the steering wheel. On a very slippery surface, you may not be able to steer around a curve or turn. When a front wheel skid occurs, the only way to stop the skid is to let the vehicle slow down. Stop turning and/or braking so hard. Slow down as quickly as possible without skidding. Subsection 2.17, 2.18, and 2.19 Test your knowledge. 1. Stopping is not always the safest thing to do in an emergency. True or false? 2. What are some advantages of going right instead of left around an obstacle? 3. What is an escape ramp? 4. If a tire blows out, you should put the brakes on hard to stop quickly. True or false? 5. How do you know if your vehicle has anti-lock brakes? 6. What is the proper braking technique when driving a vehicle with anti-lock brakes? 7. How do anti-lock brakes help you? These questions may be on the test. If you can't answer them all, reread subsections 2.17, 2.18, and 2.19-2.20. Accident procedures. When you're in an accident and not seriously hurt, you need to act to prevent further damage or injury. The basic steps to be taken at any accident are to protect the area, notify authorities, care for the injured. 2.20.1 Protect the area. The first thing to do at an accident scene is to keep another accident from happening in the same spot. To protect the accident area, if your vehicle is involved in the accident, try to get it to the side of the road. This will help prevent another accident and allow traffic to move. If you're stopping to help, park away from the accident. The area immediately around the accident will be needed for emergency vehicles. Put on your flashers. Set out reflective triangles to warn other traffic. Make sure other drivers can see them in time to avoid the accident. 2.20.2 Notify authorities. If you have a cell phone or CB, call for assistance before you get out of your vehicle. If not, wait until after the accident scene has been properly protected, then phone or send someone to phone the police. Try to determine where you are so you can give the exact location. 2.20.3 Care for the injured. If a qualified person is at the accident and helping the injured, stay out of the way unless asked to assist. Otherwise, do the best you can to help any injured parties. Here are some simple steps to follow in giving assistance. Don't move a severely injured person unless the danger of fire or passing traffic makes it necessary. Stop heavy bleeding by applying direct pressure to the wound. Keep the injured person warm. 2.21. Truck fires can cause damage and injury. Learn the causes of fires and how to prevent them. Know what to do to extinguish fires. 2.21.1 Causes of fire. The following are some causes of vehicle fires after accidents. Spilled fuel, improper use of flares. Tires. Underinflated tires and duals that touch. Electrical system. Short circuits due to damaged insulation, loose connections. Fuel. Driver smoking, improper fueling, loose fuel connections. Cargo. Flammable cargo, improperly sealed or loaded cargo, poor ventilation. 2.21.2 Fire prevention. Pay attention to the following. Pre-trip inspection. Make a complete inspection of the electrical, fuel, and exhaust systems, tires, and cargo. Be sure to check that the fire extinguisher is charged. En route inspection. Check the tires, wheels, and truck body for signs of heat whenever you stop during a trip. Follow safe procedures. Follow correct safety procedures for fueling the vehicle, using brakes, handling flares, and other activities that can cause a fire. Monitoring. Check the instruments and gauges often for signs of overheating and use the mirrors to look for signs of smoke from tires or the vehicle. Caution. Use normal caution in handling anything flammable. 2.21.3 Firefighting class types of fires. Figure 2-20 Class of fire type of extinguisher. Figure 2-21 Knowing how to fight fires is important. Drivers who didn't know what to do have made fires worse. Know how the fire extinguisher works. Study the instructions printed on the extinguisher before you need it. Here are some procedures to follow in case of fire. Pull off the road. The first step is to get the vehicle off the road and stop. In doing so, park in an open area, away from buildings, trees, brush, other vehicles, or anything that might catch fire. Don't pull into a service station. Notify emergency services of your problem and your location. Keep the fire from spreading. Before trying to put out the fire, make sure that it doesn't spread any further. With an engine fire, turn off the engine as soon as you can. Don't open the hood if you can avoid it. Shoot foam through louvers, radiator, or from the vehicle's underside. For a cargo fire in a van or box trailer, keep the doors shut, especially if your cargo contains hazardous materials. Opening the van doors will supply the fire with oxygen and can cause it to burn very fast. Extinguish the fire. Here are some rules to follow in putting out a fire. When using the extinguisher, stay as far away from the fire as possible. Aim at the source or base of the fire, not up in the flames. Use the right fire extinguisher figures 2.20 and 2.21 to detail the type of fire extinguisher to use by class of fire. The B, C type fire extinguisher is designed to work on electrical fires and burning liquids. The A, B, C type is designed to work on burning wood, paper, and cloth as well. Water can be used on wood, paper, or cloth, but don't use water on an electrical fire can cause shock or a gasoline fire it will spread the flames. A burning tire must be cooled. Lots of water may be required. If you're not sure what to use, especially on a hazardous materials fire, wait for firefighters. Position yourself upwind. Let the wind carry the extinguisher to the fire. Continue until whatever was burning has been cooled. Absence of smoke or flame does not mean the fire cannot restart. Subsection 2.20 and 2.21 test your knowledge 1. What are some things to do at an accident scene to prevent another accident? 2. Name two causes of tire fires. 3. What kinds of fires is A, B, C extinguisher not good for? 4. When using your extinguisher, should you get as close as possible to the fire? 5. Name some causes of vehicle fires. These questions may be on the test. If you can't answer them all, reread subsections 2.20 and 2.21 2.22. Alcohol, other drugs, and driving 2.2 2.1. Alcohol and driving, what is a drink? Figure 2-22. Drinking alcohol and then driving is very dangerous and a serious problem. People who drink alcohol are involved in traffic accidents resulting in over 20,000 deaths every year. Alcohol impairs muscle coordination, reaction time, depth perception, and night vision. It also affects the parts of the brain that control judgment and inhibition. For some people, one drink is all it takes to show signs of impairment. How alcohol works. Alcohol goes directly into the bloodstream and is carried to the brain. After passing through the brain, a small percentage is removed in urine, perspiration, and by breathing, while the rest is carried to the liver. The liver can only process 1/3 an ounce of alcohol per hour, which is considerably less than the alcohol in a standard drink. This is a fixed rate, so only time, not black coffee or a cold shower, will sober you up. If you have drinks faster than your body can get rid of them, you will have more alcohol in your body, and your driving will be more affected. The blood alcohol concentration BAC commonly measures the amount of alcohol in your body. See Figure 2.22. All of the following drinks contain the same amount of alcohol: a 12-ounce glass of 5% beer, a 5-ounce glass of 12% wine, a 1.5-ounce shot of 80-proof liquor. What determines blood alcohol concentration? BAC is determined by the amount of alcohol you drink. More alcohol means higher BAC. How fast do you drink? Faster drinking means higher BAC, and your weight. A small person doesn't have to drink as much to reach the same BAC. Alcohol in the brain. Alcohol affects more and more of the brain as BAC builds up. The first part of the brain affected controls judgment and self-control. One of the bad things about this is it can keep drinkers from knowing they are getting drunk. And, of course, good judgment and self-control are absolutely necessary for safe driving. As BAC continues to build up, muscle control, vision and coordination are affected more and more. Effects on driving may include straddling lanes, quick, jerky starts, not signaling, failure to use lights, running stop signs and red lights, improper passing. See Figure 2.23. These effects mean increased chances of a crash and chances of losing your driver's license. Accident statistics show that the chance of a crash is much greater for drivers who have been drinking than for drivers who have not. Effects of increasing BAC Figure 2-23. How alcohol affects driving. All drivers are affected by drinking alcohol. Alcohol affects judgment, vision, coordination, and reaction time. It causes serious driving errors, such as increased reaction time to hazards, driving too fast or too slow, driving in the wrong lane, running over the curb, weaving 2.2.2. Other drugs besides alcohol, other legal and illegal drugs are being used more often. Laws prohibit possession or use of many drugs while on duty. They prohibit being under the influence of any controlled substance, amphetamines including pep pills, uppers, and bennies, narcotics, or any other substance, which can make the driver unsafe. This could include a variety of prescription and over-the-counter drugs, cold medicines, which may make the driver drowsy or otherwise affect safe driving ability. However, possession and use of a drug given to a driver by a doctor is permitted if the doctor informs the driver that it will not affect safe driving ability. Pay attention to warning labels for legitimate drugs and medicines, and to doctor's orders regarding possible effects. Stay away from illegal drugs. Don't use any drug that hides fatigue. The only cure for fatigue is rest. Alcohol can make the effects of other drugs much worse. The safest rule is don't mix drugs with driving at all. Use of drugs can lead to traffic accidents resulting in death, injury, and property damage. Furthermore, it can lead to arrest, fines, and jail sentences. It can also mean the end of a person's driving career. 2.23. Staying alert and fit to drive. Driving a vehicle for long hours is tiring. Even the best of drivers will become less alert. However, there are things that good drivers do to help stay alert and safe. 2.23.1. Be ready to drive. Get enough sleep. Sleep is not like money. You can't save it up ahead of time and you can't borrow it. But, just as with money, you can go into debt with it. If you don't sleep enough, you owe more sleep to yourself. This debt can only be paid off by sleeping. You can overcome it with willpower, and it won't go away by itself. The average person needs 7 or 8 hours of sleep every 24 hours. Leaving on a long trip when you're already tired is dangerous. If you have a long trip scheduled, make sure that you get enough sleep before you go. Schedule trips safely. Try to arrange your schedule so you are not in late debt before a long trip. Your body gets used to sleeping during certain hours. If you are driving during those hours, you will be less alert. If possible, try to schedule trips for the hours you are normally awake. Many heavy motor vehicle accidents occur between midnight and 6 a.m. Tired drivers can easily fall asleep at these times, especially if they don't regularly drive at those hours. Trying to push on and finish a long trip at these times can be very dangerous. Exercise regularly. Resistance to fatigue and improved sleep are among the benefits of regular exercise. Try to incorporate exercise into your daily life. Instead of sitting and watching TV in your sleeper, walk or jog a few laps around the parking lot. A little bit of daily exercise will give you energy throughout the day. Eat healthy. It is often hard for drivers to find healthy food. But with a little extra effort, you can eat healthy, even on the road. Try to find restaurants with healthy, balanced meals. If you must eat at fast food restaurants, pick low-fat items. Another simple way to reduce your caloric intake is to eliminate fattening snacks. Instead, try fruit or vegetables. Avoid medication. Many medicines can make you sleepy. Those that do have a label warning against operating vehicles or machinery. The most common medicine of this type is an ordinary cold pill. If you have to drive with a cold, you are better off suffering from the cold than from the effects of the medicine. Visit your doctor. Regular checkups literally can be lifesavers. Illnesses such as diabetes, heart disease, and skin and colon cancer can be detected easily and treated if found in time. You should consult your physician or a local sleep disorder center if you suffered from frequent daytime sleepiness, have difficulty sleeping at night, take frequent naps, fall asleep at strange times, snore loudly, gasp and choke in your sleep, and/or wake up feeling as though you have not had enough sleep. 2.23.2 While you are driving, keep cool. A hot, poorly ventilated vehicle can make you sleepy. Keep the window or vent cracked open or use the air conditioner, if you have one. Take breaks. Short breaks can keep you alert. But the time to take them is before you feel really drowsy or tired. Stop often. Walk around and inspect your vehicle. It may help to do some physical exercises. Be sure to take a mid-afternoon break and plan to sleep between midnight and 6 a.m. Recognize the danger signals of drowsy driving. Sleep is not voluntary. If you're drowsy, you can fall asleep and never even know it. If you are drowsy, you're likely to have microsleeps, brief naps that last around 4 or 5 seconds. At 55 miles an hour, that's more than 100 yards. And plenty of time for a crash. Even if you are not aware of being drowsy, if you have a sleep debt, you are still at risk. Here are a few ways to tell if you're about to fall asleep. If you experience any of these danger signs, take them as a warning that you could fall asleep without meaning to. Your eyes close or go out of focus by themselves. You have trouble keeping your head up. You can't stop yawning. You have wandering, disconnected thoughts. You don't remember driving the last few miles. You drift between lanes, tailgate, or miss traffic signs. You keep jerking the truck back into the lane. You have drifted off the road and narrowly missed crashing. If you have even one of these symptoms, you may be in danger of falling asleep. Pull off the road in a safe place and take a nap. 2.23.3 When you do become sleepy. When you are sleepy, trying to push on is far more dangerous than most drivers think. It is a major cause of fatal accidents. Here are some important rules to follow. Stop to sleep. When your body needs sleep, sleep is the only thing that will work. If you have to make a stop anyway, make it whenever you feel the first signs of sleepiness. Even if it is earlier than you planned. By getting up a little earlier the next day, you can keep on schedule without the danger of driving while you are not alert. Take a nap. If you can't stop for the night, at least pull off at a safe place, such as a rest area or truck stop, and take a nap. A nap as short as a half hour will do more to overcome fatigue than a half hour coffee stop. Avoid drugs. There are no drugs that can overcome being tired. While they may keep you awake for a while, they won't make you alert. And eventually, you'll be even more tired than if you hadn't taken them at all. Sleep is the only thing that can overcome fatigue. Do not rely on coffee or another source of caffeine to keep you awake. Do not count on the radio, an open window, or other tricks to keep you awake. 2.23.4 Illness. Once in a while, you may become so ill that you cannot operate a motor vehicle safely. If this happens to you, you must not drive. However, in case of an emergency, You may drive to the nearest place where you can safely stop. 2.24. Hazardous materials rules for all commercial drivers. All drivers should know something about hazardous materials. You must be able to recognize hazardous cargo, and you must know whether or not you can haul it without having a hazardous materials endorsement on your CDL license. 2.24.1 What are hazardous materials? Hazardous class definitions figure 2-24. Hazardous materials are products that pose a risk to health, safety, and property during transportation. See figure 2.24. 2.24.2 Why are there rules? You must follow the many rules about transporting hazardous materials. The intent of the rules is to contain the product, communicate the risk, ensure safe drivers and equipment. To contain the product, many hazardous products can injure or kill on contact. To protect drivers and others from contact, the rules tell shippers how to package safely. Similar rules tell drivers how to load, transport, and unload bulk tanks. These are containment rules. To communicate the risk, the shipper uses a shipping paper and diamond-shaped hazard labels to warn dock workers and drivers of the risk. After an accident or hazardous material spill or leak, you may be injured and unable to communicate the hazards of the materials you are transporting. Firefighters and police can prevent or reduce the amount of damage or injury at the scene if they know what hazardous materials are being carried. Your life, and the lives of others, may depend on quickly locating the hazardous materials shipping papers. For that reason, you must tab shipping papers related to hazardous materials or keep them on top of other shipping papers. You must also keep shipping papers in a pouch on the driver's door, or in clear view within reach while driving, or on the driver's seat when out of the vehicle. 2.24.3 Lists of regulated products. Placards figure 2-25. Placards are used to warn others of hazardous materials. Placards are signs put on the outside of a vehicle that identify the hazard class of the cargo. A placarded vehicle must have at least 4 identical placards. They are put on the front, rear, and both sides. Placards must be readable from all 4 directions. They are at least 10¾ inches square, turned upright on a point, in a diamond shape. Cargo tanks and other bulk packaging display the identification number of their contents on placards or orange panels. Identification numbers are a 4-digit code used by first responders to identify hazardous materials. An identification number may be used to identify more than one chemical on shipping papers. The identification number will be preceded by the letters A or M. The USDOT Emergency Response Guidebook ERG identifies the chemicals all identification numbers are assigned to. Not all vehicles carrying hazardous materials need to have placards. The rules about placards are given in Section 9 of this manual. You can drive a vehicle that carries hazardous materials if it does not require placards. If it requires placards, you cannot drive it unless your driver license has the hazardous materials endorsement. See Figure 2.25. The rules require all drivers of placarded vehicles to learn how to safely load and transport hazardous products. They must have a commercial driver license with the hazardous materials endorsement. To get the required endorsement, you must pass a written test on material found in Section 9 of this manual. A tank endorsement is required for certain vehicles that transport liquids or gases. The liquid or gas does not have to be a hazardous material. A tank endorsement is only required if your vehicle needs a Class A or B CDL and your vehicle has a permanently mounted cargo tank of any capacity, or your vehicle is carrying a portable tank with a capacity of 1,000 gallons or more. Drivers who need the hazardous materials endorsement must learn the placard rules. If you do not know if your vehicle needs placards, ask your employer. Never drive a vehicle needing placards unless you have the hazardous materials endorsement. To do so is a crime. When stopped, you will be cited and you will not be allowed to drive your truck further. It will cost you time and money. A failure to placard when needed may risk your life and others if you have an accident. Emergency help will not know of your hazardous cargo. Hazardous materials drivers must also know which products they can load together and which they cannot. These rules are also in Section 9. Before loading a truck with more than one type of product, you must know if it is safe to load them together. If you do not know, ask your employer. Subsection 2.22, 2.23, and 2.24 test your knowledge. 1. Common medicines for colds can make you sleepy. True or false? 2. What should you do if you become sleepy while driving? 3. Coffee and a little fresh air will help a drinker sober up. True or false? 4. What is a hazardous materials placard? 5. Why are placards used? 6. What is leaped at? 7. What are the danger signals of drowsy driving? These questions may be on the test. If you can't answer them all, reread subsections 2.22, 2.23, and 2.24.